It's time for TWiT, This Week in Tech. Why is 6 afraid of 7? Because it's episode 7, 8, 9. That's why Jim Dalrymple is here from Loop Insight, Georgia Dow, and the fabulous Alex Lindsay makes his return to our airwaves. And there is lots to talk about, including more drama with TikTok, Apple's big announcement, and why the Apple Watch is great, not just for kids, but for seniors too. Was Tim Cook on a green screen? Alex Lindsay can explain. And The Mandalorian wins its first Disney Plus Emmy. It's all coming up next on TWiT. This Week in Tech comes to you from TWiT's LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company doesn't have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure, even when they're working remotely. Check out LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech. Episode 789, recorded Sunday, September 20th, 2020. TikTok, don't! This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. Thinking about moving your data storage to the cloud? Wasabi is enterprise-class cloud storage at one-fifth the price of Amazon S3 and faster than the competition, with no fees for egress or API requests and no complex storage tiers. Start a free trial at wasabi.com. Enter the code TWIT. And by ExpressVPN. Get the most out of your streaming services today with ExpressVPN. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/twit. And by stamps.com. Anything you can do at the post office, you can do at stamps.com. For a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment, go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and enter the code TWIT. And by Raycon. Raycon's wireless earbuds are perfect for listening to audiobooks, music, or podcasts. Go to buyraycon.com/twit and get 15% off your order. It's time for TWiT, the show where we cover the week's tech news with my favorite people in the world. Look who's here, birthday boy, Jim Dalrymple and his beard. Is your beard a little younger than you?
A little bit.
Yeah, just a touch. Happy birthday. So you had it was yesterday, right?
Yesterday, yep.
Awesome. If your mom had waited one more day, then that Earth, Wind, and Fire song about the 21st of September could have been your birthday song.
Right.
Do you remember Jim Dalrymple's birthday in September? Happy birthday, Jim. It's great. Great to have you on. Also joining us, all the way from Montreal, it is the beautiful Georgia Dow in her special virtual reality chamber. Hello, Georgia.
I wish. Hello. How are you doing?
I'm good. Everything's great. You've been really a great blessing on our after-hours shows, I must say. Thank you for doing that.
We've been having a lot of fun. I quite enjoy it.
Yeah, we did the match game last time. That was exciting.
The match game?
It was very exciting.
Did a VR game?
Yeah. That was cool.
Played poker? Yeah, poker. The VR one was really kind of neat.
There's something about
different.
You.
I've never done that.
When it's time to do an after hours, they just call Georgia.
Because I'm loony, naturally. I'm just game. A little bit.
She'll do anything.
It's just so much fun. You can't have enough fun in your life.
Thrilled to have you. And here's a guy we haven't seen in ages and ages. He's been off doing important things, no doubt. Mr. Alex Lindsay.
Good to see you.
Yeah. Good 090 Media. And you're still doing your office hours every morning on YouTube, I know, because I see. Early
yes,
morning.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Every morning. it's fun. I think someone did the calculation. I think we've got 165 in a row or something every day. And
that by itself is something. I mean, that's amazing.
It's really effortless for me. I mean, it's just really fun. You know, it's just an incredible, it's kind of grown into an incredible group of media professionals that, you know, can field almost any question about media production. And so we have a great time every day. It's really a lot of fun.
yesterday you did focus on education, which was actually really or day before yesterday, which is really very interesting. But you had Rick Salmon on, who's one of my favorite photographers. You've done so many great things. It's really
We do education on Friday, the second hour. So we do the first hour, the very first hour, the pre-show is like an hour. It's just us messing around. And then there's a show at 7 a.m. And then the second hour is where we have different things. So on Tuesdays, we have audio, and Wednesdays, we have cameras. But Fridays, we have education, and Saturday as well, because educators just need to think about this a lot right now. How do you virtual media? How do you create, content for your classes? How do you deal with your classes? How do you make that work? And we've had about half to 75% of the panel has become educators. And so there's about 15 to 20 people that are all everything from university to e-learning to elementary, and they're in the administration, they're the teachers. And so it's really, you're getting from the trenches, the issues and answering all the questions. It's really an interesting conversation.
Yeah, no kidding. And you got musicians on and you do it all in Zoom, which is insane.
Well, for that kind of conversation, I don't think Zoom has a lot of competition. Being able to collect those people. And now, like, for instance, we started bringing on music artists because Zoom improved all the audio.
Oh,
and
interesting.
So now that we get 192 kilobits, 48K, responses. We had Brian Vander Ark on from The Verve Pipe and Peter Himmelman. So we've been bringing more artists on.
So you're not having them do a double ender. You're just having them on Zoom and the audio is good enough to...
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That's good. And a lot of it's about the conversation. So the artists aren't just playing a concert. They're talking about the songs talking about their creative process and a lot of those other bits and pieces. Nice. And so Daria Musk talks about, she's been doing it longer than anybody else. And then, of course, Peter Hillman was on Twit at one point, years ago.
Oh, a lot of the Twit people. You got Amber on and I see Luria Petrucci, formerly the artist formerly known as, now it's good. She'd probably be happy. Callie Lewis, I forgot her stage name. It's youtube.com/AlexLindsay if you want to see Office Hours. Now that you just flashed up our story of the week, only because it's the gift that just keeps on giving, TikTok. I don't even know if this is up to date. I have no idea. This was this morning. So should I do the whole darn thing? I don't even know if I want to. It probably really begins in Tulsa, Oklahoma, when the president was having a rally, and a mom got on TikTok and said, you know what we should do? We should all register for tickets online and not go. And it went viral, maybe because it was really interesting to the other TikTokers, or maybe because China said, let's make this one viral. Who knows? Millions of tickets were purchased. They got a little help from the K-pop stans, who also joined in the thing. And it really was, I think, a little bit of the egg on the face for the Trump candidacy, because none of those people showed up. So they had a big overflow arena that was unused. They didn't even fill the main arena. And Brad Parscale, the campaign manager, got demoted, I think partly because of that. Maybe that's why the president decided he didn't like TikTok. But, of course, as you probably know, he issued an executive order saying, TikTok, you have 45 days or we're going to chop your head off. TikTok sought buyers in the United States, never did find a buyer. But during the show last week, Microsoft said, yeah, we're out of the running. TikTok has said no to us. Oracle didn't have anything to say at first and then said, yeah, well, we didn't buy it. We just bought a 12.5% stake, but we're going to be their technology partner. And because we're a big U.S. database company, we'll be storing the data in the U.S. No one knew what the president would say. He apparently, on Saturday, said, I approved the deal in concept, whatever that means. He also said the new company, TikTok Global, which, again, is not a sale. They just took a stake in it. Walmart took a 7.5% stake. So Walmart and Oracle between them have a 20% stake. ByteDance, the parent company, apparently has about 40% U.S. investors. So it's now owned by 52% American investors. I guess that satisfied the president. But he also said, and you got to kick in $5 billion for our new education initiative, teaching kids that Washington could not tell a lie and what slaves? Slaves, what slaves? I don't know. It's crazy. It's really unknown. The president said he was going to cut. He was going to tell Apple and Google they could no longer offer it for download as of this morning. That's not going on. WeChat, the other program, a chat program widely used in China, also was going to suffer the same fate this morning. But a judge in California issued a preliminary injunction. I don't even know how the U.S. government can tell Apple and Google, hey, take that out of the store. That there's no law that says they can do that. I guess Apple and Google might cooperate depending on the political winds. The fact, as far as I can tell, maybe you guys have some input on this. As far as I can tell, the only thing that the U.S. government could do is under the auspices of CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S. CFIUS can turn down foreign investment in U.S. companies, but that's not what this is. This is a foreign company. I don't know if the other thing maybe they could do is cut off the finances. They can cut the flow of money. The government can do that. They did it with Iran. They've done it with others. So that would be a way of effectively putting TikTok out of business, is saying, well, you can't transfer money into or out of the United States. None of that has happened. I don't know what is happening. I don't know what is going to happen. Alex, what do you think? I know you. The reason I ask you is because your kids are big on TikTok. You're big on TikTok.
We're not big on TikTok. We play with TikTok.
Well, your kids have the most highly produced TikTok channel in history.
There's a lot. The interesting thing over the last 6 months to a year is how well produced a lot of the stuff on TikTok has become. It has the same trajectory that we saw with YouTube, where there's a lot of junk being thrown in at the beginning. And then as people start to make money, they start spending more money on equipment and process and everything else.
Well, you can also give credit to the algorithm, and this is true also on YouTube. It's a brilliant business model. You make a platform people want to put stuff on. So you get a lot of people, millions of people, contributing video for free. And then you have an algorithm that finds the best stuff and surfaces it. So probably 99% of the stuff on TikTok's crap.
It doesn't matter. And you don't see it very often. You rarely see anything. Yeah, and what it's really good at, one of the things that TikTok has that YouTube doesn't, others don't, is the high iteration rate. So it's so easy to move on to the next next video. It is so, even if you watch the video, you're only watching it for 15 seconds or a minute to a minute or less. And because of that, it's able to get lots of information back from you. So it's constantly hearing back what you like and don't like. It's counting your view time in seconds or milliseconds. It is looking at, do you share it? Do you save it? Do you like it? Do you, you know, all these other things. There's, but just the action of watching it for more than a moment tells it that there was something about that caught your eye. And so, and then it's basically doing kind of a final four process where it essentially sends it out to a small sample and then keeps on expanding that based on the responses. And so, I think that it is, but the real power of TikTok has really been the use of copyright-free or at least released audio. The audio is really, audio is really hard to do in production. And so being able to use other... setting the system up from the start where you can reuse the audio and really working out the deals where you can use 15 seconds of copywritten music. Those things are have been incredibly powerful.
Did they get that from Musical.ly, or was that in TikTok before they acquired Musical.ly?
No, I think that was all that was largely Musical.ly.
So that was a U.S. company they acquired a couple of years ago.
And they made, and then they made deals with the music industry, and then the music industry, I think the rumor I heard was, I don't know exactly what the number was. I think it was $60 million or something for 15 second samples. And then of course they turned it into a much bigger, process. And, but the For You gets really is the For You page is the one that really, it's hard to see, like when you watch it on a web page, like what we're looking at here, it's hard to see why anyone would use it. But when you watch it on a phone,
Well, the thing I have to point out here is I haven't logged in. So this is what everybody would see. This is not based on anything I've done. And yet it still surfaces the most interesting stuff because it's got information from everybody else.
And it is, it zeroes in pretty quickly. A lot of people will jump on TikTok, and the first time I jumped on it, I was like, "Oh, this is horrible."
It gets better.
It's about 3 to 4 hours in, you start to it starts to like kind of basically not at one, even one sitting, but 3 or 4 hours of usage over time, it will start to zero in on what you like and what you don't like. Yeah. And it's a really, the algorithm is really interesting because
now,
it's,
we should point out that the algorithm was not, does not go with the company. China's regulators said, no, that's we're going to keep that. But nobody bought it. So that really isn't the issue. Oracle will not get the algorithm. They'll just be the U.S. database company.
I don't know how – I think the algorithm is important, but I think that a big piece of what's important now is just the sheer size and the response and
the users.
The culture that's built around it. I think that that's – now all these users are, even like Charlie DeMello, have already started to move. You know, she opened up on Triller over the last week.
And yeah, so Charlie's the only real celebrity that's gone there. Triller is now looks to be the right-wing answer, like Parler was for Twitter. It's attracted Eric Trump and others. And
Is it? I don't know whether it's.
I think Triller is pretty quickly turned out to be the conservative response to TikTok, right?
What's interesting is that there's a fair number of conservatives on TikTok too. I mean, you'll wander
through. Well, that's the thing. TikTok is not inherently liberal or conservative. It's not even inherently anti-Trump, despite what happened in Tulsa.
Right.
And that's the other kind of problem I have with this is that there's no legal grounds for doing this. There's no evidence that TikTok's done anything. It's all supposition that TikTok, because it's a Chinese company, might be spying on Americans or be used to propagandize Americans. But
I think it just makes Americans really inefficient.
It's a waste of time, but then
it just lets them waste a lot of time.
So almost everything on your phone is a waste of time.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's probably the most damage that it does is it sucks up lots of time.
Where do you come down on this? You don't seem like a natural TikToker, but you love music.
I'm actually not a natural TikToker.
No. Although that beard could be, and you might not even know it.
Yeah, right. What I wondered through this whole thing, and maybe you or Alex knows, is with all of the things that were thrown at TikTok, you know, it's sending all this information back to China and all of this kind of stuff. Did that actually affect the way that Americans use the service?
And
I mean, did they believe
that's,
that?
Again, an assertion that has never been shown or demonstrated. TikTok says, no, we use American servers and we back up in Singapore. We do not store American users' data in China. All we know is that they could, that the Chinese government, it's by law, is the same as in the United States. The Chinese government can go to any Chinese company and say, I want that information. And by the way, don't tell anybody. But that's the same in the U.S. So it's a presumption. If the president knows something, he's not sharing it. He's not even giving any detail at all. I doubt very much there's any evidence. Now, on the other hand, I do think the Department of Defense says service personnel can't have TikTok on their phone. That's completely reasonable. Goldman Sachs has said that. Any private company can do that. I don't have a problem with private companies or end users saying, I don't have TikTok on my phone. I don't want it. But partly because it was a time sink, but partly because I don't want to send any additional information to China, just as I don't have Facebook or Instagram on my phone. But I don't. Go ahead.
I don't think that it's collecting any more data than Facebook.
Right.
You know. So I think that. I mean, I think
that's almost impossible.
Know. Yeah, it's collecting a lot less, as far as I can tell. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And I don't let my kids have it on their phones. But that has more to do with the type of content.
But you let them create content on it, which is interesting.
We create it together.
Yeah.
You know, so what's fun about it from a producer's perspective is that it's 1 minute or it's 30 seconds and it's really easy and fun. And it's something you can just kind of create and put up. And we haven't created that many. As soon as I got really busy, they kind of stopped in February because I got so busy with COVID. And once March came, I couldn't even take a day off.
Lucasfilm quality.
Well, we were experimenting. I mean, the first ones were all on the phone. I mean, we were the year before, over 2019, I had done a lot of consulting for folks that were in TikTok. So I was helping with some live concepts and so on and so forth. And so I was doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes with it and building some things. And so my kids wanted to see what I was doing. So we started having fun with it. And so we started with phones. But admittedly, one of the last ones we did there before I got really busy was we were shooting with a Blackmagic 6K and log. So it was, you know, but again, for me, it was more of an experiment in the production pipeline more than anything else. Yeah, exactly.
Do you let your kids use TikTok or not? Would you let them have it on their phone, for instance, Georgia?
I don't. I don't let my kids use social media at all, though.
That's really the problem, if you ask me. I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I just don't feel comfortable with that. I just, it's not a safe place for them, and I feel more comfortable when they're older. They can make that choice for themselves, but I don't use it all. They don't have any Facebook account, and I think that the entire TikTok thing, when we talk about privacy, it just seems that hypocrisy of Facebook gets away with known privacy violations and, you know, Cambridge Analytica and other situations. And really, they get kind of a mid slap on the wrist or please stop doing that. Whereas TikTok, you know, they say we're going to completely get rid of you. And that's what bothers me. And so it's not really protecting the people for TikTok at all. It really is that the government is upset about this in comparison to Facebook, which, you know what, do whatever you want and we'll ask you stop and then please stop again when you do it again, which I think is exceptionally inefficient. And yeah, I just find that really upsetting.
The enemy is coming from within the house.
Right. We've put it there.
Yeah.
Right? It's 1984, except it's us.
I don't have a problem with getting rid of TikTok if we decided it was a threat. I don't think there's any precedent or any law that allows the federal government to say you must take that off the... can you think of any case where the government has said to Apple or Google, take that app off the store? I don't think they've ever done that.
Well, in some ways, I think that China is getting a little bit of its own medicine.
Well, China does.
This is the kind of stuff
China threatens America. Right? Yeah, sure. Yeah, China has the great firewall. That doesn't mean we need a great firewall of the U.S.
No, I know, but I think that's the irony of all of this is that this is exactly what China's doing all the time.
Yeah, I can understand.
And also, doesn't it also set that precedent that if you do something that we don't like, right? Be careful, everyone. Because if you do something that we don't like, we're going to force your hand, right? Like, so it didn't go through with it. And you really have to think that if they did not do this, what would happen? Because you don't want 100 million angry TikTok users coming after you and influencers, right? We've already seen
some of them may actually be voting age.
Well, the insanity of this, to get to your point, is that we making a bunch of TikTokers really angry on election year because they're not all, you know, 16 years old. A huge number of them are over 18, and having them all angry, they've invested an enormous amount of time into this platform. Mm-hmm. These are people that wouldn't likely vote most of the time, and you're now energizing them.
Yeah, and this is their tribe, right? So when you're part, like we used to live in tribal villages and you'd protect your village and that meant everything to you. And it used to be then it was your, you know, now that we live in these little tiny secular units and we don't really need anyone, we still need a tribe. And so it's like their sports team. So it becomes this us or them. They're very, you know, linked to TikTok, and to get rid of that and to not have their influencers, you end up having this us or them. You become the enemy. And I think that, during an election year, this could have ended very poorly for a government to have to say, you know what, we're going to get rid of that. And then what are they going to do, right? What do? You protect your tribe.
I think the biggest problem here is, yes, of course, there are issues with China. There are lots of issues with China. To trivialize it and say, oh, look, we're going to get TikTok as if that's the solution is dopey. It's a blunt instrument. It's not even that. It's a trivial solution to a much larger problem, and I don't think it addresses the real issues at all of China's exercise of soft power, what China is doing to the Uyghurs. There's all sorts of intellectual property theft. There's all sorts of issues in our relationship with China. Banning TikTok doesn't really rise to the level of a useful tool against that.
I think the right word would be capricious.
Capricious might even be. Jim Dalrymple, you don't care at all about this stuff, I'm sure.
I'm not on it. Anytime I see social media, I see a company, no matter who it is, that is trying to get as much information as they can. Yes. And a lot of that information, like Alex was saying, you know, this is good information for them to have because they can see what you like, what you don't like, what you react to. Of course, they want to be able to recommend videos that you're going to like even more, because that's going to make the service even more popular and you're going to keep coming back. But, you know, I think that Facebook and Google kind of ruined it for me as far as looking at what other companies are doing with their information and the amount of information that they actually want from us.
Right.
Age of the user for TikTok is really different in compare. Like, you're getting an age group that no other media platform right now has, right? 60% is between 16 and 24.
Wow.
So you end up with a huge percentage of the most media savvy and huge media consumers, because a lot of people at that age are not, like, they're doing school, but even during the summer, they're spending a lot of time on social media. That is where they hang out mostly. Most of my clients between that age are TikTok users and huge TikTok consumers.
And a big threat to Instagram, Facebook, and WhatsApp, right?
Yes.
In fact, we know that apparently Mark Zuckerberg went to the president and said, you know, wouldn't be a bad idea if you did something about this TikTok.
Right. So, get rid of them.
It's not get rid of them.
It's not just the popularity either. It changes the way you actually look at media, because when you get used to this accelerated media that you're getting with TikTok, it's kind of like when I started listening to audiobooks, you know, what we started in cassette, and so it was always played at 1x. But when you started getting on your phone, you started playing at 1.25 and 1.5 and everything. And now I listen mostly to 1.75 or 2x for most books. And your brain gets used to it. It's used to that saturation. Mm-hmm. With TikTok, you get very used to things coming at you very fast. There's no intro. They can't afford it, because someone's making a decision in 2 or 3 seconds as to whether to. So they have to get into the meat in about 2 to 4 seconds is what you have to get into showing people what you're going to do. And so the issue is that you get used to that, and you go back to YouTube.
Mainstream
and
it's just useless.
Painful.
I got no time for that.
It's too slow.
When you look at Facebook, or I'm sorry, at YouTube, you watch a YouTube video, and you're thinking in the back of your head, I would have watched 5 or 6 TikToks by the time they finished that intro. You know, like it's just, you know, like, and the intro.
I don't think that's a good thing, by the way, to teach kids to have a short attention span. We're doing our best here at Twit. We're doing our best here at Twit to really slow you down.
That's why Twits are so long.
Our shows don't actually kick into gear until the third hour. So there.
But it's true. The more instantaneous you end up with your feedback, you end up wanting to have things more instantaneously.
It's a Skinner box.
Right? So, exactly. And the more that you do that, the faster you want that interaction. You want that shot of dopamine much sooner, and you want to be able to consume, because that, like, I'm missing out. The more that you consume, the better you feel, but then the worse that you feel. It's kind of the opposite effect if you go through a withdrawal, which is great for TikTok, because you end up going through a withdrawal because I'm not finding out about the newest, greatest, best things. Makes those neurons more excitable to shorter and shorter attention spans, which increases agitation and is not great for ADHD and other situations, or, you know, things that you are already kind of predisposed to.
Now I want them to ban TikTok.
Well, the other thing, though, is it's really interesting is the lab that it has become for accelerated learning. If you go up to TikTok and start searching how to's or, you know, little cooking pieces and so on and so forth, because of that constraint, people have gotten really good at showing you how to do something complex really fast, you know, and
it's true. The cooking videos on TikTok are amazingly compact.
Yeah. And they are. And as someone who shot some of those, they're really hard. You know, it's hard to show all the steps in a minute that you have to do, whether it's cooking or some kind of little skill, or because they show all kinds of things. And it's a very powerful use of fast cutting, time lapse, you know, all kinds of, you know, a lot of speed ramps, to kind of pull all that together into that. And they're getting better and better at it. At first it was kind of ham-fisted, and now there's a real science that people are not, I don't know if it's science, but there's a skill set that's building on how to show things. In fact, a lot of the things that I'm like right now storyboarding out for some of the production that I'm working on, we're trying to stay inside of that constraint of 1 minute, maximum 5 minutes for teaching a skill. I mean, we'd rather build playlists that are going to stack through those things as opposed to one long video, because it forces us to stay inside that constraint and make it more.
Is this a bad thing or is this just evolution?
Is it a bad thing?
I don't know if it's good or bad.
Is it a bad thing for people's attention spans? Like when they talked about when Sesame Street first came out and they kind of tried to keep thing within like 15 seconds to like, you know, 2 minutes segments so that they were kind of really short. There's a huge outrage of it's going to ruin the attention span of children and the way that they grow up. We are getting to be less and less tolerant of being able to delay, to work through things. Delaying gratification becomes a skill that I test children on, and I actually help kids train to have longer attention spans, because the thing is that, yes, you can learn on TikTok, but most classes, we are still dealing with the antiquity kind of way of teaching, where you're sitting in a classroom, it's dry and dull for most of the point of time. You're not getting up. And those that can survive going through schooling to be able to do that can get much more elaborate teaching versus people that can't handle it because they're already predisposed, perhaps, or because of this, they have learned to not be able to suffer for prolonged periods of time, which is a complete skill, being able to suffer and delay gratification.
Yes.
It's a skill that is being lost, right?
Is it, and so should teachers then, should teachers start learning to deliver lesson plans in 1 minute chunks?
Well, no,
listen, it would reach more kids. 100% it would reach more kids if it was hands-on learning. They were actually doing something.
There was a moral panic about Sesame Street. Do you think now 20 years or 30 years down the road that's actually proven true, or was Sesame Street a great boon for education?
I think it was just a microcosm. Most of the time they were not spending on Sesame Street, hopefully. And so it was just a small amount of time. And the rest of life was kind of dry and dull. And you had to kind of go through things. And there was more hands, like you know, facial interactions and dealing with the personal skills that they're losing.
That's nostalgia.
It's just the amount of time more than...
I worry that might just be nostalgia for the way it used to be rather than... a genuinely better way to learn is in a boring, slow grind?
It is not a better way to learn. 100% it is not a better way to learn. The way that we used to learn, the way that our brains have not changed in 150,000 years.
Right.
So we have caveman brains in a modern society. And we used to learn by doing things, we're mostly mimics, right? So we would just learn by observing others. And because we had to go where our parents were, we would watch and see and then do. That works exceptionally efficiently. I do think that there is a cost to the amount of time that some people spend on social media and on the internet. And almost all of my clients, even the ones that are very young, right, in the teenage years, say that they spend too much time on social media. And so they also know the way that they feel, their mood is changed because of that. So
that's true.
I don't like the way that we learn anyways. I think that the kids that used to be the leaders, the one that are moving and they have to be thinking and things have to be fast paced, we lose them in a classroom where you have to sit and have someone drone on perhaps for hours.
And the thing is that we did a lot of eye tracking about a decade ago. So this is before a lot of this stuff got big. And we were watching people's attention because we were trying to figure out, how to execute some of these things. And one of the things we found is that talk for 3 to 5 minutes straight, one person talking 3 to 5 minutes straight, and people, the attention span just dropped it's like a cliff, between 3 and 5 minutes, they were just gone, and they'd wait and it's not that they closed the window. They just weren't looking at it anymore.
What if it was Eddie Murphy doing it or somebody who was a compelling speaker?
We were just doing it as informational. We're giving you information. Right. This is what
so maybe
what
the
that
speaker
looks like.
Needs to be more interesting.
No, the speaker, the next generation of speakers is going to have to be at entertainment quality, most likely. But the other thing is interesting,
I learned
is that
when I was giving talks, I used to give a lot of talks, and I noticed that really all people wanted to be was entertained. I was always giving them a lot of factual stuff. They just wanted a few jokes, some entertainment, a little tap dancing.
They did not care.
Yeah. And it kind of disappointed me. It was like, well, I'm here to tell you something, but they didn't care about that. So that's why I stopped doing public speaking.
You had a few keeners. You probably had some keeners that actually did care, right? And you're very entertaining with what you give. But it's true. If this is not your area, your field of what you want to know, like if Jim's the one that's listening and it's not about perhaps like his favorite music or a beer, like maybe that you lose Jim in that point of time, right? Like,
what?
So it's not an entertaining. Jim, you didn't hear,
I gave a talk once.
I have to get a
beer. Never do
first.
This. I gave a talk once to HBO. I followed Lewis Black, the comic.
Oh, no.
Never.
Don't
ever
do that.
Follow Don't Lewis that. Black unless you're Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor.
Right. Because
it was like people were like they were like falling asleep because I'm not Lewis Black, and I wasn't doing comedy. So there is something to be. It could just be the presentation as opposed to the length of time.
But the big thing is that we're, you know, like for the stuff that we're doing with, if you look at office hours, what I do in the mornings, we're having
that's information dense.
It's very information dense, and it's all talking, and it's
but you move it along.
Well, yeah, we're changing the subject every two to three minutes, and
that's intentional.
Our average view time. Oh yeah, it's absolutely. We will take a subject at certain times and let it run for 10 or 15 minutes, but that's like the maximum. And generally it's two to three minutes is generally with the clock we're on. And our average view time is not over 90 minutes. So that's all we pay attention to is average view time. Like how long do people watch? I don't care how many people watch, I care about how long they watch.
See,
you know, and
so Alex, what's the difference between somebody with viewing? You were talking about eye tracking and you know that the things just fall off a cliff after 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. What about listening? Do people still take things in?
Yeah, they absolutely can be taking things in and listening to it, but it's a passive listening mode. And so for us, that's not the most effective place. That's not where you want to be if you're trying to teach someone something. You want to keep them inactive as much as you possibly can. You know, and the places that we see that active mode is generally conversation or action. So when they're taking action on things, they're in active mode. If they're in conversation, which is why we spend so much time, the thing I do in the morning is all conversation, because that's what, and we literally tell people that are going to come present, we're going to talk for 15 minutes and then it's all going to be Q&A. And then the whole thing snakes through and people stay active because there's a chance that they, you know, they're staying active because they're being heard, you know, and then there's an active place for them. There's a positive reinforcement to keep on being part of that conversation. And it's just a much more compelling thing to watch, you know, and we see that with talk radio has been doing that forever. You know, like so it's not like
everybody except me, because I end up talking to the same people for half an hour. I'm terrible. Right, if anybody should be fighting against TikTok, it's me, because I am long attention span. I can't do short attention span.
It goes the other way, though. I'm talking about short videos, but it's mostly short as far as keeping that content really dense. So where teachers, like in the stuff that we're doing, when the teachers are finding a lot of success is flipping that, what they call flipping the classroom, which is I'm going to give you a bunch of videos to watch, and then we're going to have a conversation about it in class.
Right.
And that's a lot easier on the teacher in a lot of ways. Other than creating the content, it's a lot easier on the teacher because the students are more engaged because they're not just listening to something that they may have only a tangential interest in.
Well, the chat room's already bored, so I think
I think that you also know your audience, though, Leo, right? Like, so the people that are watching this show, you know your audience. It's not your main group of people.
There's no feedback loop. They're not sitting right there going, we're bored. Can you move on? Actually, there is one guy in the chat room.
There is sometimes people there. And you actually listen to the chat room and you see what's happening and you're like, okay, this one's not going well. Doesn't Joe Rogan go on
for 3 hours? But then his listeners are pretty high, so they don't care.
He's also a comedian. He does a really job of popping in little tiny bits. And then he also chops up his podcast into little small consumable parts for people that are not going to be long listeners. So he gives both.
I resent this. I am definitely a horse and buggy broadcaster. And I want to go back to an agrarian age where you guys had 8 hours to listen to a show. Actually, honestly, I think that's why I do well in certain forms of media, which are basically background media. It's just a constant drone in the background. Nobody's really listening. It's just going on and on and on. And then that, you want it longer. It's like Tibetan bells or something. You just want it to go on because it's just background noise. That's me. I'm background noise. I'm wallpaper.
Well, and I think that all of these things are, each one of them has their own place, you know, so video is really good at showing you things because as Georgia was talking about, you know, we've been doing the same thing for 150,000 years and a lot of it was watching somebody else. And so video, Video is really good at teaching you how to do something or explaining something. Conversation is good at sussing out these little bits and pieces. Audio is really good because you can do it. You can multitask. I like to listen to stuff while I'm cleaning the yard or cleaning my house or doing something of having something in the background. But I can listen to a long, you know, 6-hour book or 8-hour book. Right. That's there because I'm doing something else with it. And so, and I'm able to deal with those topics in a slower, more interesting way rather than trying to have me pay all of my attention to it. So right. I think that one of the things that, and the advantage that we have now with the new media devices is that we can use all of those things at the same time. We're not doing it very well right now. We're not using video where it belongs and audio where it belongs and conversation where it belongs and, you know, and print where it belongs, where it's really good at reference. Show me what are the steps? And so we see it in little glimpses of where that's working. But as I think that COVID is forcing us to get much better at using these media types for what they're good at, because we have to, you know,
we don't have
any
other choice.
We're in this huge rethinking.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Huge rethinking.
Yeah, COVID really has all sorts of unexpected side effects. It's kind of interesting. Let's take a little bit break. Jim Dalrymple is here, birthday boy, Jim Dalrymple, from loopinsight.com. Actually, I want to get to the Apple event. That's really why we brought you all here. You're Apple experts. We'll talk about the new watch and the new iPad just a bit. Alex Lindsay, from 090 Media and Office Hours on YouTube. And, of course, the great Georgia Dow. Her anxiety videos, actually videos about everything from parenting to sleeping to reducing anxiety, are available at anxiety-videos.com. And Georgia is very kindly. It's funny. When we first started doing quarantine, you gave out your email address for people who are struggling in this. Did you get a lot of emails?
Has it tapered off?
Are people kind of getting used to it now?
Are they getting used to it? I think that for some, like starting up school and then having to deal with how are they going to mitigate going to school with all of the issues with the pandemic has caused actually an increase in anxiety with a lot of people. And I'm seeing more people right
worse.
Now. The emails are less, but I am seeing more people.
If you're struggling a little bit or you just want somebody to talk to, Georgia has given out her email address, georgia@westmounttherapy.com. She's a licensed therapist, so she's not just somebody off the street. I think you know that already.
like me.
Or me.
Yeah, you can email Leo.
I'll yell at you.
Alex. Email Jen, too. You can. You just might get different advice.
I don't even answer my email. Don't email me, please.
You don't email.
Whatever you do, don't email
you
me.
Can't even find Leo. You can't even find him.
No, I hide my email address. I really do, because I don't want to disappoint people. If you give out an email address, the implication is you'll respond. You have to now respond to everybody. Ain't nobody got time to respond to everybody. Nobody. Our show today brought to you by, I'm turned out to be the curmudgeon of the crew today. Our show today brought to you by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. I love Wasabi. It's the perfect solution if you're looking for a replacement for buying new hard drives every week. You know, there's a lot of businesses that generate a lot of data. They know, in fact, pretty consistently, we're going to be using a terabyte more of data every month or every year or every week. We're going to be buying more storage all the time. This is exactly who should be putting stuff on Wasabi, up in the cloud. Typically, you can store data in Wasabi's cloud for less than just the maintenance fees on the maintenance fees alone on the same amount of on-prem storage. Wasabi's disruptive price performance model makes buying cloud storage just a natural addition to what you're already doing. There's two ways to pay. You can buy at their simple flat fee. They don't have a bunch of tiers. There's no charge for API access, no charge for egress. That really bugs me. A lot of cloud services, it's cheap to put it on there, but if you ever want your data back, you're going to be paying. Not with Wasabi. One flat rate, very affordable. Or you can buy something called reserved capacity storage. This is for anybody who knows, hey, we're going to need this much more storage. We're going to need more storage every month, every year. Reserved capacity storage makes buying cloud storage a natural addition to on-prem. If you're thinking about buying more hardware storage, just compare it against the price of 5 years of reserved capacity storage, for example. You can buy storage in 1, 3, or 5 year increments. And of course, the discount's greater the more you buy and the longer you buy. You might be saying, well, all right, fine, but on-prem is more secure. It's safer. I trust it. No. Wasabi security is greater than on-prem storage because they're professionals. They're doing the right thing with your data. 11 nines of durability. They host in premier tier 4 data center facilities that are highly secure and fully redundant. They do active integrity checking. Everything you store in Wasabi is checked for integrity every 90 days. And because it's redundant storage, you're not going to lose a bit. You're just not going to lose anything. It's secure by default. All data stored in the cloud at Wasabi is always encrypted at rest, even if you don't specify it. They follow all the industry best security models and design practices, access control mechanisms like bucket policies and ACLs. My favorite part of Wasabi, the thing that just for me clicked, is you can make your data immutable. That means it cannot be erased. It cannot be altered. Ransomware can't get to it. Fumble-fingered employees can't get to it. Your data is absolutely immutable. That's what you want. It's compliant with every industry. HIPAA compliant, FINRA, CJIS compliant. Wasabi. It's not just highly secure, disruptive technology that's turning its industry on its ear. Storage that's 80% less expensive and up to 6 times faster than Amazon S3. In fact, the only question I have is, why aren't you using Wasabi? And by the way, if you're a managed service provider, this is great for you and resell, because you can earn more and charge less. Everybody wins. Join the movement. Migrate your data to the cloud and do it with confidence. Look, calculate the savings for yourself. Start a free trial of storage for 1 month at wasabi.com. WASABI. Like the hot stuff you get with sushi, except it's hot cloud storage. WASABI. Wasabi.com. The free trial link is TWIT. Enter the code TWIT. TWIT. We thank them so much for supporting This Week in Tech and for providing a really great solution for anybody who's got lots of storage needs more all the time. Wasabi. All right. Apple had a little event, but it's just one event. It looks like Apple's going to have a lot more events because they didn't even get to the iPhone. They didn't even mention silicon, Apple silicon. Jim, they talked about a watch, they talked about an iPad, and they talked about Apple One, their new bundle. Give us your analysis of what we saw on Tuesday.
Well, first of all, if you look at the Apple Watch, what we've been seeing since the Apple Watch was first released is a focus on fitness and medicine.
Yes.
So it seems to have gone back and forth year after year where you have a focus on fitness. You know, we've added new routines and things that you can track. And then the next year they have some medical things that they put in, and they partner with some of the greatest hospitals and foundations in the world to help people and doctors. This year is kind of the first time that I look at it and see the two really came together. Everything is starting to mesh more. You know, when you look at Apple Fitness One or Apple Fitness Plus, sorry, I'm actually really looking forward to that.
I'm so excited. If I were Peloton, I'd be a little worried, to be honest.
Well, yeah. I mean, and Peloton's response was, well, this just, you know, solidifies our stance in the community.
They should take a full page ad out in the New York Times. Welcome, Fitness Plus. Honest.
So I think this was really important. These, you know, the SE, the Apple Watch SE, still has a lot of compelling features, but not as expensive.
It seemed like it should have been less. It's $279. It seems like it should have been less than that.
Cheaper.
Yeah, but if you look at the Apple Watch SE, you're only missing a couple of the higher end medical functions. So, you know, you still get cellular and GPS. It's still water resistant. You know, you have a lot of the main features. You even get the high heart rate, low heart rate things.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a lot packed into an SE for the price.
I guess so. I just feel like, well, particularly because of the family. The kid version.
Family setup.
I thought it'd be really nice if they could get that price point down below $200. I feel like, I don't know, Georgia, would you, I mean, really the alternative is if you have a kid who's in maybe fourth grade or later, there's a lot of pressure to give them a cell phone, not just for them, not because their friends have one, but for you to keep track of them, so they can call home if they have a problem. But this seems like a better solution that gives you all the features you want in a smaller package. Would you consider doing this with your kids, Georgia?
So my kids do have, like, they have our
old, they have smartphones
and they have Apple Watches just because of my fields, you know, they don't use their phones. They have to pay for their time to be able to use their phones, but they do have their watches and they can use them as they wish. And I know that sometimes they're using their watches at night, because even though you should have all of your charging devices in a central unit so your kids aren't sneaking them at night, because trust me, all your kids are sneaking them at night. We don't really do that with the watch. Like they can read some of the news and they can't play that many games.
It's not that much fun. Yeah.
It's fun, and they might do it every once in a while, but I don't think that that's that big of an issue that we're controlling it. I think that more families would be able to afford it, especially now when, you know, you're kind of stuck in, if it was underneath, you know, $200
in comparison to being kind of
expensive.
They have a school mode, which is really cool.
Yes,
so the watch you can't dick around with a watch when you're in class. That's great.
Which is so nice, and that you can see it. The teachers can see that it's on school mode, right, which is the big deal if you're cheating. My son just messaged me saying he's never used his watch
at
night.
Hey,
yeah, no,
it's good that your son's watching. That's awesome.
He's watching me, which is great. It's because they don't have any. They've used up their video game time already.
They're stuck watching Twitter.
So
that's
the most entertaining thing, right? Watching mom. But I think I've seen a light on her too. But anyways. I think that that's great, because I think that that was the problem, is worry about like cheating and what's happening. So the teachers can kind of take a look right away and it's on school mode.
Right.
Brilliant. I'm sure that there'll be like some little fake school mode.
Also brilliant, because
pictures that come up.
You know, when I'm talking about price, at least you don't have to have an iPhone for each kid. Mom or dad can have one phone and make all the watches work, which is huge. Alex, would you get, you think your kids, I think they probably already have smartphones, right?
No, they don't have, no phones.
No phones.
And in fact, I control a lot of that at the router level.
Yep.
So, the kid, I have timers on the network that they use.
Smart.
So, so they're,
and Alex, you're in the lucky position that you actually probably know, you're more technologically savvy than your kids. Yeah. I don't know how many other families would.
No, it's
like, how do you control the router at your house?
Well, I have an Amplify, and the kids are on the guest network. So then what happens is I turn it on and off, and it's turned on for school, and there's a little bit of time but most of the time is off. Like, I don't have them connected to the internet for a long period of time. I didn't always do that, and I really felt like things were kind of going south. And so I, turned off most of the access most of the time. And so, they have been far more creative, happier, more connected to each other, more connected to the school, to the family. The internet is accessible, you know? And so just leaving your kids out there is like having them play stickball in, red light district in the war zone, I don't have them just randomly wandering around out in the internet. it's a big deal. The hardest part has actually been school, because it's all virtual here in Marin. And it actually has made it much harder, because I was more clamped down before school came up, where we'd open it up for certain periods of time for them to use it. They have to use all their, they can't take their electronics other than school for classes. They can't take their electronics into their bedroom. We kind of keep most of their electronics usage in the living room, is where it's okay.
I feel like these kid features are actually perfect for that, for people like you who don't want to give their kids a phone. And I think any kid who's not in, maybe in high school for sure, they need a phone.
College.
Right? High school or college. But I think, I wish these were a little less expensive, though. Because I feel like, look, you can use this to give them allowances. Each watch has a phone number. That's, by the way, don't forget, it's $279, and then you're going to pay $10 a month for cellular access as well. You can limit their contacts. You can have approve their contacts. You can have emergency SOS on it, high and low heart rate notifications. You can have fall detection. By the way, this would be great for seniors too. I want to actually give my mom my hand-me-down Apple Watch, because I'd love to have her have that on her wrist all the time. She's 87.
She should have it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And even she has an iPhone, but if she didn't, even this would be incredibly valuable. You can make calls.
You don't always, when you're falling, like right in the bathroom and other, like you could keep your watch on so you don't have to worry. It's the auto fall detection that it will call for you if you don't reply.
Exactly.
Right? I've fallen down the stairs and
you have?
Did massive amount of damage. And it was really nice, though I was still conscious, that it said, you know what, we'll call emergency services for you if you need to.
Holy
because
cow.
I think that, you know, like you're not, I didn't have my phone with me, but I did still have my watch.
Right. Are you okay?
Yeah, I think I might have broken something actually. But anyways,
we'll did this happen recently, Georgia? Now I'm worried.
This was about a year and a half ago. Wow. And I was excited to show my brother some VR. I'll give you all the gory details.
And you flew down the stairs.
I was running down the stairs.
You forgot to take the headset off, didn't you?
I didn't have the headset on yet. I was just really excited. And I fell down the stairs and broke my coccyx, which is the tailbone. And it was really horrific. It was quite a bad injury. Now it doesn't hurt anymore, but it took about a year and a half before it re-healed.
Yeah, because
you
can't put your coccyx in a cast.
Yeah, it would be a really tiny cast. It would be a very interesting cast. But no, you can't. So there's
a little butt cast.
Yeah, my doctor actually was like, I'm like, well, I'm in session all day sitting down. It's quite kind of uncomfortable. And he's like, well, you could just sit on the donut. I'm like, there's no way
no,
in therapy I'm
they'll
sitting
think
on
you
a
have
donut.
Hemorrhoids. That would be, no, that's not going to work.
It's just, it would bring up a conversation I don't want to have. So I actually curled up a little bit of a pillow, put my little cloth. I have little blankets in the office. So I put one over it. So it was kind of a cushion and I sat on
the side. That's a topic you don't want to have to bring up in therapy, your coccyx.
No, it's just not appropriate.
No. Can we talk about my coccyx, please?
I now everyone knows, but no one knew.
Everybody knows about George's coccyx. And I'm just going to keep saying that word because I enjoy it. So let's talk about the watch some more. I have to say, I have become more and more attached to the watch as they've slowly added features.
I told you you would.
You
I
were
remember
right.
when you threw it back in that drawer.
Yeah, you were right. Because at first it was just like, I don't need this. I got a phone. What do I need this? And now, you know, I use it to make memos to myself. I use it for health reasons. You know, if I'm exercising, if I'm working out with a trainer and I forget to start the watch, I feel like I didn't get any exercise. It's like it doesn't count unless the Apple Watch, unless I fill a ring.
Wasted that workout.
I wasted it.
You know what, Leo? I think that there are two things that showed this time that Apple is starting to hone in on what's important with the Apple Watch. One is family setup with supporting younger people and older people.
Yep.
And the second is Fitness Plus. I think to me, those two things, you know, all the other features aside, those two things showed that they're starting to zero in on what's important.
I agree. And I have a Peloton. I love my Peloton because I don't have to go to the gym, especially now. I don't have to go to the gym to take a spin class. It's every bit as good as a real spin class because they're live classes. You can see your metrics. You wear a heart rate monitor.
But isn't that exciting? Like being able to see, like I turned off all of the health. Like I felt just shamed by my watch saying like, you're not working out enough. Everyone else is beating you. You know, get up. I just felt shamed and it was a humiliating experience. I didn't want to. And I was really angry about it. And other people would like, Renee would be like, oh, you filled another ring. And I'm like, screw off.
I stopped sharing.
I didn't like any of that.
Yet
Fitness Plus, I was really excited about because one, I want to learn how to dance because I can't. And I would love to. And two, being able to have my stats real time now looking at me saying, you know what, you know, build your heart rate up. This is how you're doing. That was the opposite experience for me. So I'm with you, Jim. Are you going to be actually doing Fitness Plus and, you know, getting on board?
Yeah. So when the Apple Watch first came out, and I wrote this story a few years ago, it helped me lose 50 pounds. So that was a huge thing for me. And I use the Apple Watch as information. You know, so I know I can go out and have a Big Mac, but I'm going to pay for that in one way or another. So with Fitness Plus, when I was watching the keynote, one thing that did concern me is that I can't do a lot of the exercises, you know, with my knees and maybe age. I can't do a lot of those high intense exercises that they're doing. But they did say hey, we have some beginner classes that you can start off with. So yeah, I'm very excited about that. I want to get healthier. I just had another birthday, so I know that I need to be able to do that. And the fact that I have all of the gear that I need just with my Apple TV and my Apple Watch, I can do this. You know, I don't have to go out and make an investment of, you know, a few thousand dollars to buy a fancy piece of gear, whether it's a rowing machine or, you know, a bike or a treadmill or whatever it is.
Although so I also say,
like that you could change the amount of time that you're working out for. I find that like an hour, I can't do an hour, but to be able to to curate the amount of time that you're going to be training, that's right. Amazing for me. Cause I'm like, oh good. I can do like a 15 minute class. I have 15 minutes. I can do this and I'll still have time. And now, which is usually for anxiety and for depression, I just ask for 15 minutes. If you increase your heart rate by 15 minutes, you will have in about 2 weeks, if you do that four times a week, you're going to have a noticeable change. And it's the fastest change for depression and is effective for anxiety as medication. You're going to notice a noticeable change in about 2 weeks. You're paying it forward. You're not going to feel better right away. You're going to probably feel worse and be upset at your therapist or whoever's your trainer that you're making it. But then you'll feel better after. And so this is great.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. And let's not forget that this isn't a situation where Apple went out and found a guy on the side of the street to make a training video. You know, these are world-class people. And they're making new training videos every week. So you're not going to be doing the same thing all the time. They're going to recommend new ones. They're going to have new ones in there all the time. Now, that doesn't mean that you won't do the same workout, you know, two or three times a week or whatever it is that you're going to do it until you get used to that and you can do it. But yeah, see that guy?
Yeah,
no, I'm not keeping up with him at all.
Nope. I love this stuff. I agree with you. The idea of having short ones is really clever. They're as short as 10 minutes. That's really clever. They have a huge variety. And go ahead, Alex.
I was going to say, I think Beachbody is probably more at risk than Peloton. So, I mean, with all these videos coming out, you know, they have a whole video program that is going to be kind of pushed up against
that. There are a lot of companies at risk. This is cheap. Yeah. It's $10 a month, $80 a year. This is not expensive.
And it's free at first, right?
Yeah, so 3 months free. Yeah.
Everyone, like, by the time that you've done 3 months, right, you're kind of already, your barrier to entry is, like, pretty much nothing. You have all the equipment that you need. You can make it. You can curate how difficult the type of workout that you're dealing with. And then after, you know, if you like the service,
you're a weightlifter. You're definitely somebody who would use this, right? Or no? Or is this not?
I think that there's a lot of integration opportunities there that they haven't done yet, which is with the tools that we use. So, for instance, you know, I think it's great that you only need your TV and you only need your watch, and you can go a lot further, but there's an opportunity that people are experimenting with that Apple could probably tie in a lot tighter with a variety of support tools, which is, for instance, I'm going to design your workout, but if I'm talking to your, let's say your, it's Bowflex, you know, if it's talking, and mine's Revolution, so it's got these gears on it and stuff like that, it could easily keep track of my reps, my weight, everything.
Sure.
So you could end up with and Bowflex has played with these things, but it hasn't been that successful because the integration with things like the watch don't exist. And so as you start to tie those integrations in, you can get into a point where it says, okay, you're going to go, now you're going to do a bench routine, or you're going to do a curl routine. And it's keeping track of your sets. It's keeping track of your reps. It's keeping track of the weights. It's, you know, all the things that it needs to do. You don't even have to know what the weight is. It just says, this is the next weight, automatically changes it, and you pull it out and do it. And those kinds of things are just around the corner, I think. And this focus that Apple's providing, the first step is you get lots of people using it. Then it gives Apple, you know, the ability to go to all these manufacturers and go, okay, we've got, you know, 50 million people or 100 million people using this. And that makes the manufacturers more likely to partner with Apple to provide, you know, integrations. So I think that seeing hardware integration and other software integration, but hardware integration with workout tools is probably something that with this rolling out and expanding is a couple years away.
Oh, I think that absolutely that would happen. Yeah. In fact, I'm trying to remember, doesn't Apple have a relationship with some gym equipment? I feel like that the watch will pair with some gym equipment.
Yeah, they did announce that a year or so ago.
Yeah, my gym never got that, but
Without that dedicated, without the dedicated routines and process that Apple is now adding, it's just really hard to get someone to invest hardware development time against it. But if you have 100 million people using it or 50 million people using it, the numbers start to pencil out to build things that are integrated completely with those workouts.
It's actually a part of a larger Apple strategy they've been talking about for some time because they really kind of reached peak iPhone. Everybody who wanted an iPhone had bought one. That they were going to start focusing instead of sales on revenue per customer. And, of course, that's part of the services conversation. Now that they've announced Apple One, which is a bundle, services bundle, and Apple Fitness, which is the one new service in that, I'm feeling like this is a very synergistic play for Apple. For instance, it probably is best if you have Apple Fitness Plus. You can use it in your iPhone. We know you have that. But you might also end up getting an Apple TV so you could put it on your TV. I could see people doing that. I could see people saying, well, if I'm going to pay $10 for Fitness Plus, maybe I'll pay $19 and get Apple Music too, because there's music integration that even has playlists that go along with it. So if you have Apple Music, it's going to be a better experience. This is so synergistic from Apple's point of view. Tell me about your thinking on the pricing of Apple One, because this is their first bundle. We were a little concerned when we first heard about the rumors of it that it might not be priced as attractively as it could be. It includes Apple Music, Apple TV Plus, Apple Arcade, iCloud, Apple News Plus, and then later this year, Apple Fitness Plus. It is definitely a bargain if you're already buying all those. $15 a month, you get music, TV Plus, Arcade, and 50 gigabytes of iCloud. $20 a month, $5 more, you get 200 gigs of iCloud, and you can share it. But the family sharing is very interesting. And if you want Fitness Plus, that's $10 by itself. But for $30, you'd also get all of Apple Music, Apple TV Plus. I think for Apple, this might save Apple TV Plus, because a lot of us are on the 1 year free trial that we got when we bought our new iPhones, and that's going to run out November 1st. and I have a feeling there's going to be a sudden dip in Apple TV Plus if they don't do something to save it. But if it's part of a bundle,
you know, Leo, I'm paying right now $22 a month. For a family plan of Apple Music, which is
by itself
$15. Yeah. I'm paying extra for iCloud storage.
Right.
And I have Apple TV Plus, which just calculated out it would be $5 a month. So I'm paying $22 a month. And I would get Fitness Plus, which is $10 a month.
Yep.
So now
you're already saving. Yeah,
I'm up to $30. Yeah. You know, $31 there. I'm not a gamer, so Apple Arcade really doesn't mean anything to me. But on the family plan, maybe my son might like it. Or two terabytes of iCloud storage is
that's
huge.
Nice. Yeah,
I love that. I did have Apple News Plus before, and you know.
Well, that's what
really
I mean.
So, like it a whole lot. But if it's coming for free and
it
I'm
comes
spending
for free,
I'm spending about a dollar less than if I bought everything separately, and I get Arcade and News for free, then, you know, that's what a bundle is all about.
And I think it's smart because I think, like you, for me, TV Plus, Arcade, and News Plus would fall off the cliff. I wouldn't renew.
No.
But I'm going to get them for free, and then maybe you use it, maybe you get hooked on it, maybe you're a lifer. It's very smart, I think, from Apple's point of view.
Yeah, I think the pricing is a lot better than what I had anticipated it to be. If they were looking at saving, you know, $5, then that wouldn't have been good, I don't think. Yeah. But I think that they priced it in a range where a lot of people are already paying close to the amount that the bundle is, and they're going to get more. And that's what we look for from all bundles. Yeah. So
if you look at,
I'm definitely looking at that.
Yep.
Yeah, if you look at just a few, you know, like again, like for Apple users, like a million more people spending an extra dollar, that ends up being
$1 million, if my math is correct.
Yeah, yes. And this is a month.
Yes.
So yes. It ends up with Apple trying to move to subscription, right? Like even just using users that are already there, like we're already part of the pie, right? You could end up increasing the amount that's subscription because our Apple number is really going to continue increasing to infinitum. No, and that's what the shareholders want. They want increased growth.
Where do you go next with this? Do you try to put together a YouTube TV style bundle for Apple TV Plus? Do you, I mean, where, what other services do you, how do you build on this? No suggestions.
How do you build on
I was
one?
Waiting I for understand. Alex to jump in for that.
I
one.
Thought Alex might have some ideas. No,
I'm thinking through it. I mean, I think that there's a lot to build in as far as building value. I think Apple, and I do think that Apple has to, as it continues to do this, it has to think about antitrust at some point. I mean, people are starting to bring that up, and these, as you start to bundle these together, it becomes more complicated.
Well, Spotify's already brought that up, saying, oh, crap.
Well, and it's, but I think that, like, for instance, there's places that Apple hasn't played very hard yet, and I don't know whether it's contractual limitations. Right. So, for instance, the fact that they're still not, or that they're not producing a lot of their own music, just paying artists to just be the studio, is something where they're either playing nice or they're contractually obligated not to do that, you know, to keep their contracts with the music industry. Because if you look at Apple Arcade, you know, they could do the same thing where they're just, you know, funding artists, you know, to do that and to go down that path. They're already doing that with video. So I think getting more, they can get more aggressive in all of these things. So we have, the health is just the beginning. You know, there's tons of videos that are going to come out. There's hardware integration opportunities. There's lots of other bits and pieces that can be added to that. There is, then you have music. Apple could, you know, you see touches of it where things are showing up early on the Apple platform. You have Billie Eilish's song that shipped with Logic.
Right.
You have, so you have these things that are, that these tie-ins that could happen. You know, Beats One is arguably the largest radio station in the world. And so there's a lot of things that Apple has leverage in that area. Arcade is a great precursor, but you know, when, as we see more of the AR stuff coming out, it's an incredible platform for AR games.
Arcade's another example. I mean, Apple is in the game business, and so they've stopped Microsoft's xCloud and Epic's store. They've stopped these game stores, you know, and I think with a fairly legalistic interpretation that benefits them economically. They're saying, well, it's a store. We got to vet every. They said, Microsoft, you can go ahead with xCloud, but you got to let us. You got to sell each game separately, and you got to let us vet each game, or we're not going to let you do it. Which obviously is a non-starter. What does Apple do to avoid antitrust? Honestly, this is an example of me saying, "Oh, get out of the way. Let Apple do what they want to do. This is great." If you're Spotify or you're Peloton, I could see here's Spotify's statement. Once again, Apple is using its dominant position and unfair practices to disadvantage competitors and deprive consumers by favoring its own services. We call on competition authorities to act urgently to restrict Apple's anti-competitive behavior, which left unchecked will cause irreparable harm to the developer community and threaten our collective freedoms to listen, learn, create, and connect. I don't know. I think as a consumer, I'm saying, I don't think you're depriving me. I think this is good.
Well, yeah, as a consumer, I think that the problem is almost everything Apple is so consumer centric that almost everything they're doing is to the advantage of the consumer. We're paying what we're paying for these apps. We're not paying 30% more because of that walled garden, because that we're no longer pirating all that software. We're paying a fraction of what we used to pay. I mean, I remember I paid $7,500 for an app. You know, yeah. And I've paid many apps. I've paid hundreds of dollars. And so we're now buying these apps for the price of a latte that used to be $50 or $100. And all of these things have become more available because of this platform and more profitable for a lot of folks because of this platform. And so the consumer is benefiting from it. But these larger organizations are trying to figure out the problem really is that Apple's pulling away. They're using they have the size. They have unique technology. They have a focus that makes it an integration between the hardware and software that nobody else has.
Right.
So nobody else has what Apple has. And if it was, it'd be one thing when it was a little company, but now it's the largest company in the world with this super tight integration that makes it almost impossible to compete, you know, and especially, you know, for anybody as they kind of just keep going. So there's some point where it becomes a problem. I think that legally, antitrust is complicated right now because Apple technically only owns 19% of the global market and, you know, far less than 50% of the US market. I think that Android was the best thing that ever happened to Apple because they sit in this.
Right.
If Android didn't exist, Apple would be in all kinds of trouble.
Right.
But because, yeah. Because they sit in a minority position, I mean, obviously Spotify and Epic are trying to define Apple as its own thing, but that's kind of circular thinking, you know, that to say that, you know, Macy's is its own, you know, platform, it's, you know, it's right. Or Walmart is its own thing.
Well, and that's Apple's response. They say customers can discover and enjoy alternatives to every one of Apple's services. So it's not like there isn't competition on Apple's own platform for every one of these things. This is tough because I don't want Apple to become so dominant that Spotify disappears. That wouldn't be good. I agree.
Right. Right. And so I don't know where the problem is that in our current laws, it's just very hard to define what people are trying to, I mean, you see the same problem with Amazon. You see the same problem with a lot of these other ones right. where it's not that they have a majority position anywhere. They just have really dominant minority, you know, positions everywhere. Right. You know, and I think that that is a, it's a challenge that Apple, I think Apple has to be careful of in every step they move forward. They have to keep in mind that, you know, something at some point that pin could go over. I don't think that they've hit that pin. I don't think that I think any legal challenge is going to be difficult in the United States, maybe less difficult in Europe because they're Europe.
Well, also European antitrust law is all about protecting companies. In which case you could say probably fairly that Peloton, Spotify, and others are threatened by Apple, Epic maybe. But in the U.S., it's what's the consumer harm? And I think it's hard to show consumer harm here yet unless these companies go away. Go ahead, Georgia. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, like the other piece is that an oligopoly still causes, like, you know, there isn't a ton of competition. And because of that, there are different risks to the consumer
right. yeah.
of not having the same amount of choice that we used to. And as these large companies, these mega corporations that, you know, are just, you know, raking in cash, buy up all of the smaller, right? They gobble up all of the technology that could become at one point competition. There is less choice for us. And I think that that should be curated and looked at very carefully. But when you deal with a monopoly, no, they are not.
Yeah. And I have to admit, I'm a little biased because I like this bundle. and I am.
I think you're seeing that problem in general is that Apple, you know, I think Apple users tend to circle the wagons pretty quickly. So yeah. I think that Epic thought that it was going to come out with it was going to push into this and rally the troops, and all the Apple users would just rally, just circle the wagons,
right?
You know, and kind of closed up, you know.
Well, part of Epic's problem, I think, is that it, you know, they admitted that they wanted to start their own app store, and that led a lot of people to sit back and say, hey, wait a minute. You don't want to pay the 30% to be part of Apple's app store, but you want to charge other people to sell apps on your own app store.
Yeah,
you know, there was a lot of things that for me that didn't make sense about Epic's argument.
What
I
about
can see
X-Cloud?
Why they wanted to do
what
it.
What about
but
Microsoft and
X-Cloud? It was very self-serving, obviously,
on Apple's part.
On Epic's part.
On Epic's.
Yeah, but what about xCloud, Microsoft's xCloud, where it's basically like Netflix. It's a streaming game service.
Yeah.
Apple's blocked that as well.
And this is where Apple starts to get itself into a bit of mess because, you know, they do have exceptions.
Right.
And when they allow those exceptions, like for Netflix, and I love Netflix. I love Apple TV Plus. And the fact that Netflix won't integrate with that just drives me crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, when Apple allows these types of exceptions, then it frees up other companies to come in and say, yeah, but I want that exception as well. And I think that's clearly where Microsoft found itself, but it didn't work.
Right.
I feel like that allows people to take a step back and look at what's going on and say,
I have to say, I feel like Apple is about to put on the afterburners. That if I were Android, I'd be very worried at this point. And as a result, Apple has to worry because they have to always just remember when Microsoft came in and gave Steve Jobs $150 million because they didn't want Apple to go away because it was the only thing keeping Microsoft from facing antitrust, accusations. You want to keep a vibrant ecosystem in your competing with you. Otherwise, it looks bad. On the other hand, as a consumer, I want to bathe in the warm Apple tub.
Well, and I think that I do think that as we start to see, and I think the thing that I'm tracking a lot is USDZ and LiDAR. Like, it's coming. What's coming to the surface, I think, is bigger than the phone.
You're talking about the 3D features on the new iPad.
Yeah,
let's take a break because I want to talk about – they also announced new iPads. And I think in a way that also shows how Apple is about to kick on the afterburners with Apple Silicon. And so that's something else to talk about. Georgia Dow, Jim Dalrymple, Alex Lindsay, perfect panel for this conversation. But we're going to take a little break. Our show today brought to you by our fine sponsor, ExpressVPN. Did you know? I didn't know this. You probably know this, Alex. You've seen The Office, the U.S. office. Love it. Maybe because you loved it so much, you saw the U.K. office, which started it all with Ricky Gervais. Did you know there are 9 other countries with their own versions of The Office? I had no idea.
And it's all packaged. It's all these different verticals, you know. And everyone cuts up all their content into all these different
It's not the Michael Scott office. It's their own, Bulgarian office or whatever. Anyway, the reason I bring it up is because now once I found that, I want to watch these. And here's the way you can do it with ExpressVPN. We talk all the time about how a VPN protects your privacy by keeping prying eyes of your internet service provider or your mobile carrier from what you're doing online so they can't sell it to marketers, which, by the way, they will if they can get it. We also talked about how it keeps you secure in a Wi-Fi access spot because all your data is encrypted. The bad guys can't see what you're up to. But the third reason people use VPNs, ExpressVPN especially, is because it lets you change your location. With ExpressVPN, you can choose from almost 100 different countries. And when you emerge onto the internet from those countries, those sites think that's where you're from, giving you access to content you can't normally get in your region. If you have run out of things to watch on Netflix, ExpressVPN is a must-have. For less than $7 a month, ExpressVPN lets you access thousands of new shows and movies on Netflix, on Amazon Prime, on Disney Plus, and tons of other streaming services. Now, you wouldn't want to try this on other VPNs because they're not fast enough, but ExpressVPN is so fast you can watch HD video, no buffering, no issues. In fact, ExpressVPN is so good, I just leave it on all the time. I forget to turn it off all the time. I don't even notice I'm running ExpressVPN. It works on every device you've got, phones, laptops. You can put it on your router, protect the whole house if you want. You can put it on your smart TV. It's just the best, absolute best VPN out there. And of course, needless to say, your privacy is 100% protected. They have independent third-party audits of both their privacy policy and their secure server, trusted server technology to make sure that no logging is going on, no information is being saved. Your footprints disappear immediately when you log off, and that's exactly what you want. ExpressVPN, you can try it right now. We've got a special deal that brings the price down to below $7 a month. I think that's a really great deal for the best VPN out there. Go to expressvpn.com/twit. When you sign up for a year, 3 months free, but only if you go to expressvpn.com/twit. You can access content available all around the world. Tons of other streaming services with no geographic restrictions.
I use it to watch the Steelers.
Because you can be in Pittsburgh.
The NFL, I pay $150 for the NFL ticket where I used to in the U.S., but they'd black out half my Steeler games.
So frustrating.
And so I just the next year I paid for it in Delhi, India. So
paid
them for it, but I just route through Delhi to watch the game. And it works perfectly.
Oh my God. And by the way, that's not illegal. It's completely legal. I asked Netflix, I said, can you do this? They said, yeah. If you have a Netflix account and you're suddenly in the UK, you watch what's in the UK. Right. So they don't mind. They just thought, well, that can't possibly be a good experience because they didn't know about ExpressVPN. It is. It's awesome. ExpressVPN.com/twit. We thank them for their support of This Week in Tech. I am going to say that I think Apple, they didn't announce new iPad Pros, but their new iPad Air is practically a Pro, right? An 11-inch Pro. It's got a USB-C connector. The styling is the Pro styling. It's got Face ID. And most importantly, the new iPad Air has a very fast, I think it's the fastest processor they sell now, right? Jim, is that right? Or am I wrong on that?
No, you're right. The Air has the new A14 chip. There still are some differences between the Air and the Pro.
You don't get the LiDAR.
Well, it's a 10.9-inch screen as opposed to a 12.9-inch screen. So the screen is one thing. The number of cores that are actually used is different, too. The Pro still uses more cores than what the Air does.
But it's on a lesser chip, though.
Yes, exactly. I mean, this is not ideal for Apple to
release a
brand new chip on a lesser iPad. The cameras are different. The Pro has an array of cameras on the back where the Air doesn't. The Pro has 1 terabyte of space. It has True Motion or Pro Motion and True Color.
Hertz, refresh.
And so there are very noticeable differences. Somebody like Alex would probably still want a Pro even with the A14. They'd probably still go by a Pro because there are a lot of other things going on in there that the Air just doesn't account for. Now, even if you look at the iPad 8th generation, for the average user,
That's
going to be
amazing.
The perfect device.
$329.
Yeah, I mean that's just going to be, and that's for the Wi-Fi. If you want cellular, it's $459. Right. So, but the iPad Air is a very powerful system. I don't think that there's a lot of people that came out after the event and asked, well, why would I ever want a Pro? I think once you start digging down to those real Pro features, you start to see that there are still reasons to have the Pro. Now, when the Pro does get the A14, I suspect that they'll allow the Pro to use more cores and be even faster than the Air, even though it's the same chip.
How much of this is also, by the way, I love it that they have Touch ID in the on-off switch.
Yeah, that's cool.
I would like to see that across the board. Now that we all wear masks, Face ID is not quite as great as it used to be. but I wonder how much of this is just flexing Apple silicon. This is their first 5-nanometer chip.
Yeah.
It is a mind-boggling chip. I can't remember. They have the numbers of transistors and this thing, it almost as if they're saying, okay, Apple Silicon, here it comes. Well,
and also I think that the integration, again, between the hardware and the software and being able to build the silicon exactly for what they need becomes a really compelling process and really difficult to compete with for other people because everyone else is trying to do it all. You know, they're getting it from over here and kind of piecing it together over there. And Apple being able to really move towards all of those things together is a big advantage. Yeah. You know, and I do think that the separation between the Pro and the new Air is actually pretty good because Pro folks like me won't buy anything without LiDAR at this point because we can see what's happening as a Pro user. but it definitely solves most of what you would want to do. The vast majority of it is solved with the Air. It's incredible value for an iPad.
It also works with the Magic Keyboard, which I think was a big differentiator Pros. Is it the same Magic Keyboard that you would get for an 11-inch Pro? Or do you have to get one? It is. So
yes. So
that's good news if you already have an 11-inch Pro, for instance. And I think the Magic Keyboard and the trackpad really make the iPad something different, something new.
The Magic Keyboard literally changed the way that I use the iPad. My iPad Pro, I would never use the iPad Pro in a way that, that Alex would, or maybe even Georgia would. I mean, I'm writing, I'm doing my thing, you know, but the keyboard, the Magic Keyboard really changed. So I think it's probably one of the best accessories that Apple has put out in years.
I agree. Yep.
And if you pair that with the Pencil, now you get kind of everything, right? Like, and I'm not an iPad user. Like we, you know, have a goodle of like, you know, iPads lying around the house. My husband was an iPad user. I used my Mac, and he has the Pro, and he was like, always like, you know what? Now I have a better computer than you do because of the weight of the Logitech keyboards. And I didn't like the other keypad and the way that it sat up. I did not find that comfortable, but now with the Pencil, this is now lightweight. I could bring it anywhere with me. I think that people that use a computer for work, this becomes a better solution because you can use the Pencil, and with the new software, and this changes the game completely. And I think that this is a great value. And I think that a lot of businesses, like I would have loved if they had an option that was kind of like even cheaper, but like this is an amazing option for people, right? And you end up with Touch ID, so you're very secure. It's really good. And the colors, I'm not going to lie, I am attracted
I love
to
the
that
colors.
Pink.
Which one
the
would you get?
The colors are beautiful. The pink one. I'm pink not one. Even going to say. Rose gold. No one's, it's I pink. Shouldn't say pink.
It's pink. It's pink. Okay.
Oh, it's so
pink.
Pretty.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one thing that I'm kind of amazed at is the surround sounds that doesn't seem like it should work.
Because it's only two speakers.
In the iPad.
So
only
true.
Two speakers.
Yeah.
And if you listen to something that has surround sound, it's like it's this huge sound around you. And I'm just like, I don't understand that. I don't understand how that works. Like it should not, that should not work. And it does.
That is another difference. The Pro has four speakers, right. And the Air has two, I believe.
Yeah, just two. Right.
But that is a good point. That this is where Apple's magic of, you know, making stuff work that shouldn't work really comes out. But, you know, when I got my iPad Pro and the Magic Keyboard, I used it for months. I never used my Mac. The only reason I went back to using my Mac, and that's what I'm using now, is because I was testing out Big Sur. So then I started using my Mac again. But I didn't feel like I was missing anything using the iPad with the Magic Keyboard. I just, you know, kept doing my thing. All the apps that I needed were there. Everything that I needed was there. And, you know, like Alex said, with LiDAR and the things that Apple's coming out with, you could probably do more on an iPad in a lot of cases than what you could on your Mac.
So,
but it's all in what you become comfortable with.
So it's only wonks like me that say, oh, it's 5 nanometers, A14 Bionic, this must be better. For a normal user, you're going to look at the feature set and they're going to say, well, I need this or I need that, and it's going to make sense. Because I thought with the release of this A14 that maybe that sets the clock ticking to update the Pros, because even though they just updated them, they no longer have the fastest processor out there. But you don't think that's the case, Jim?
I don't think that it's as important as what some people thought that was important. I don't think it is, because there are a lot of Pro features and a lot of power in the iPad Pro as it is. Now, are they going to update that with the A14? Of course. You know, they may even bump that with something else. But they are definitely going to update it. But, you know, like you said, they have Apple Silicon Macs to consider in all of this, too.
Well, and I think that updating too quickly then creates kind of a turmoil for buyers. Like, you never know when to buy if they're upgrading. So I think that I'd be surprised if we see anything before next year, because they already did it this year. So it's kind of like,
we got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just was weird that they would release a newer, faster, higher number chip.
A better chip. But for most people, that's not what they're looking into, right?
No.
For us, like, you know, techophiles, like we're looking at all of the numbers. But for most people, it's what will it give me and what is the price? And that's pretty much where it ends up. Will it do the things that I need and can I afford it? Right. And that's it. That's where it ends off. So I don't think that most people will even recognize that it's a faster chip.
Yeah, but it's a 6-core, 4 GPU chip in a tablet. I mean, God. Not to mention that it comes in green.
What is that?
$599 is also, I mean, it's a good price. That's for the 64 gig. It's a pretty powerful system.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I don't think that there's any average user out there, or even maybe semi-pro user, that couldn't get done what they needed to on an iPad Air.
For 90% of what I do, I could probably do it all on an Air. You know, I mean, I don't think that it has almost all the things, because the primary use that I have for it is I'm constantly all my creative process, whether I'm writing or I'm designing, let's say, a presentation, it all starts on my iPad. So I can draw things out on every slide and I can figure those things out. You know, it's very interactive and easy. There's still some speed issues as far as, but I think that adding the mouse and the keyboard make a big difference in how fast. It's just a matter of the apps then catching up and letting me use those with the same level of precision as I have on the desktop. Right. And then there's that last little bit of some of the media related stuff that the new iPads are, you know, that we may see, you know, in other pieces of hardware, you know, as we come down. And I'm really tracking, you know, the addition in Final Cut and Motion of the 3D engine. I think that that's shouldn't be seen as trivial, you know, compared to where Apple's going, is you have an authoring package that is going to effectively be able to build a lot of 3D content.
Next year for AR glasses, or will it be a VR glass? What do you think?
I have no idea.
No idea.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be VR. I think that Apple says over and over again. They haven't beat around the bush too much with that, that AR is probably the solution.
So then this begs the question, they didn't even mention the iPhone. They didn't even say, oh, and next month the iPhone or anything. They didn't even mention it, right? Did they say anything at all about
that? They never do. I mean, no. we know there's when a Sony's reasonable release expectation.
That's a September event. It's been a new iPhone every year since 2008 or something. It's a reasonable thing to say, where's the iPhone? I guess.
Yeah, but they were very clear. I think it was their last earnings call that the iPhone was going to be delayed for several weeks.
Right.
So I think that set expectations.
So, yeah, I mean, no, there were rumors that there was going to be an iPhone 12 announced, but most people, reasonable people, said, well, no, it's not going to be the iPhone 12. So when is...
I was just sad we didn't get Apple AirTags, so yeah. I'm still a little bit
So
hurt.
What's the schedule, Georgia? Is it a phone and AirTags next month, and then the month after Apple Silicon?
I'll say the phone is next month. I would love to have my AirTags next month, but now I'm just so hurt. I don't even want to give to hope. I don't want to give to hope.
It makes sense you'd announce that when you announce the phones.
Please. Please.
And I should point out,
I'm the one that's crying.
There's
at
an
home
ultra
every time.
Wideband chip in the Series 6 watch, isn't there? There's a U1 chip in there. So that makes now you could search for stuff with your Dick Tracy watch.
Yeah, we could. If it happens, I'll be cheering and screaming. And if not, I'll be crying again. And I'll get all of the tweets of like, I'm so sorry, George. And then people think something actually horrible happened to me.
Let's get a Jim Dalrymple yep or nep.
Tell me, Jim. Help me.
What's next? What's next?
You're our only hope.
Next is definitely the phone.
Okay.
New iPhone next month.
Okay.
So
early October, late October.
I think that they're going to try and do it as early as they can, because they have to get it out there for the shopping season.
Right.
You know, so they have to make sure that all of that is, you know, syncs up.
So I'm going to say October 6th.
As long as that happens, as long as they can get it out, doesn't matter when they announce it, actually, it's when they can ship it to get into that holiday shopping season.
So you announce October 6th, you ship on maybe the 16th, or if you're really pushed a week later on the 23rd, nobody would freak out if you did that.
So, Jim, does that mean a nope to AirTags? Did you nope it already?
No, AirTags are a myth. You know,
goodness.
I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to hurt you.
You just called them a myth. That is the most painful.
It's a unicorn
ever.
What I need,
slaughtered the unicorn.
I just want to find out that it was secretly installed in the controller for my Apple TV, because that's the thing that seems to get lost
that's
in,
the thing.
In our family.
It falls down the crack.
It's around somewhere.
Every time.
How can I not even have a, how can I not just ask Siri to
Where's my gosh darn thing
to me, please?
I think AirTags are one of these things that could come out at any time.
Right.
You know, that would fit into any keynote that they have. Typically, Apple is very focused when they do the iPhone keynote. The AirTags could be, you know, one of these, not a one more thing, because that's usually a big thing. But, you know, it could be just an add-on to the iPhone keynote, because it's certainly not as big as the iPhone. But they are very focused in all of their keynotes on whatever products they're announcing. So
we know that they're also going to release their first Macintosh with Apple design chips inside this year. Do you do that in an iPhone event, or do you have another event for that? Do you have a third fall event, Jim?
Well, they could quite easily have another event, especially since they don't have to bring people in.
Right.
I mean, these are very well done virtual events, so they could have an event every week if they wanted to. The last one was only an hour long.
Oh, but it was, and Alex, I knew as I'm watching this, Alex is just loving this. It was a gorgeously produced event this time.
Right? I thought it was pretty good.
I got a question for you.
Now that he produces all of these awesome TikTok videos, he's like, up your game, Alex.
Yeah, yeah. It should have been shorter, right? Should have been a minute.
Here's the thing is that there's this crutch that Apple has around teleprompters that I just think that they need to get rid of.
I hate teleprompters,
and it kind of drives me crazy, because if you watch it, even on short things, they're saying a couple things in that clip and you see their eyes going like this, or they have this kind of dead stare.
Yeah.
That dead stare is because they're not converging on the camera, right? And so the thing is that, and there's no reason to do that, because if you storyboard these things out, what happens is you know that I only need you to say these eight words and I'm going to do it in this frame, and then I'm going to jump to a graphic, and then I'm going to jump to something else, and I can do that. And I felt like there must be some reason that Apple is trying to still hold on to a little of the stage experience or something, because it still had what I call presentation pantameter, which is this weird sing-songy thing that people do when they're reading teleprompters or when they're reading their notes on the DSMs, right? And so downstage monitors. What I really feel like is they should take some YouTubers, probably not TikTokers, but YouTubers, and have them like just get Marquise Brownlee and iJustine and Renee Ritchie to just bring them in as a team, give them an Apple budget, and let them build a keynote.
Okay.
and because it's not tight enough. It's the whole thing. What I'm saying is what they're doing isn't tight enough. It's not this long drawn out thing with these long spaces between every sentence is not when you do that on stage because you have to, but you could make it so much more snappy. They could have pulled at least 5 or 10 minutes out of that and made it feel like a lot more energy. In fact, I think
Tim Cook on a green screen? So Tim is in the hall. It looks like at the campus in front of a no pane window. And then they do a drone shot right through the window. And then, I want you to look at this shot, because you could tell. First of all, I feel like his teeth are a little blue, which I think maybe is a tell. I don't know. What do you think?
Before the pro speaks here, I want to say no, because I actually saw Tim's reflection in the window.
Oh, anybody can do that. That's easy.
But would they?
We should come back and map it.
Let's take a look.
Alex.
I saw the reflection too, and a lot of people said, "Oh no, that proves he's there." That seems like the least likely way to prove he's there.
I'll be honest; I'm not 100% certain. Here's the thing that I think that there's a couple things in a couple of the shots is that it does feel so that see that there's a little halo around him. That's common.
That's a tell.
And so that's a common green screen issue. The trees are incredibly still, which is an odd thing.
They're not moving.
They're not moving very much.
You're right.
His hair. So if you jump to the lab section, look at how this looks different from the lab example, and how much crisper and, you know, there's something about the lab example that feels more real. Now, I don't know, to be honest with you. They totally could have shot that practically. And what you would do for the drone shot is you would push up to the window, and then you basically take a drone and fly it.
Yeah.
Right on, and you set that drone playing at, literally hovering, and you can look at the transmission from the drone.
Yeah.
And you match the two as close as you can, and then there, because you can see a little transition as they go through the window, and that's a really common thing for us to do. I mean,
so Lisa, poor Lisa Jackson, she they put her down in the first floor. But and you see a lot of reflections there. So this to me didn't look like that looked pretty real to me.
I think this is real. I think this was absolutely
but
real.
Then,
now they definitely
then there's going to be a drone out of it as well. But I guess you're right. That could just be a dissolve.
That's,
right?
That's just a transition. The other thing though is that if you look at
the grass is moving here. There is a little breeze here. The trees are moving.
Trees.
See, they weren't moving with Tim. Oh, right. You nailed it, Alex.
So, and I don't know that for certain, but I'm just saying that was something that I know. I kept on looking at it going, wow, I can't imagine those trees being that still all the time.
Yep.
And then a couple move every once in a while. So it's not like they never move, but it seemed odd.
Seemed like a still behind it.
There were definitely somewhere like in the upstairs lobby of, Steve Jobs Theater. There was definitely there's definitely some rotoscope, right? So they're not. They're definitely cutting those screens behind the person's
talking.
Wait a minute.
There's rotoscope?
yeah. So it's not a green screen. It's that you shoot them in there.
That's a cut right there. That's easy to do.
No, I think this is just the shot. I think that they might be comping. They might be adding that Apple Watch to the white, but I don't.
Right.
I think those things are. I don't think that there was any reason to do that.
This is
up
also
there,
a real shot where she's in the Steve Jobs Theater. That feels like a real shot too. So
I know it
doesn't matter, but I thought as long as I got Alex here,
yeah.
It's weird. We were saying that feels like that sure feels like a green screen.
When it feels a little, I feel like the edges on his hair are just a little clean.
Yeah.
And usually when those are clean, they, again, if you go back to the lab shot,
yeah.
You'll see, look at how the feeling of that feels.
It feels
different.
Real. Yeah.
It feels, you know, it doesn't feel comped.
Right.
And I don't know, like, it just feels like a more realistic. And so I don't know, to be honest, this feels
He's
more
also
like
moving
it was,
around a lot more in here.
And it's a wider shot, so it's more in focus. But there was something else about it that you know definitely didn't feel quite right. I do like the transitions. I thought it was imaginative to have fun with that.
That last time too with the drone, the nice little.
Yeah, I think
drone
it's fun.
Shots.
I think it's a fun transition. I think that my number one thing is to get rid of the teleprompter and cut it tighter.
Yeah, I hate the teleprompter. Just is that because maybe they don't want to make these poor executives try to remember a script and stuff like that?
I think that absolutely makes sense when you're on stage. I don't know if it makes sense when you're able to spend a little bit of time with them and have, because remember, there's only little sections that they're doing there.
Right.
And it might be that they don't want to have it. But I mean, given the amount of effort that is required to put together one of these events, it seems and there's some companies that do this better than others. You know, I think that probably Salesforce is probably near the top of the list of their ability because they practice those things for weeks.
And they use Alex Lindsay.
No, they don't. I haven't worked with Salesforce.
Not anymore? Oh, okay.
So I haven't done any Salesforce work for a long time. But it's been 4 or 5 years.
I have to say,
so.
I don't mind. I agree with you on the teleprompter, but I don't mind this new format compared to the stage format.
Oh, no.
I think it's better. It's more informative.
I think that we're going to go. I think when they can go back, they'll do one more and it will feel so slow because they're, you know, each one of these WWC was at one level. This one was a step forward. I have a complaint again about that. I think if they got rid of the teleprompter and they cut it a little tighter, you would never be able to go back. Like literally it's like one more step forward of incremental step forward and you could never go back because now it's a show. It's no longer and if you brought the press back in, you just play them a video and let them go out and play with the gear. I'd rather watch the video.
Don't bring the. Would you mind, Jim, not getting to go to the Steve Jobs Theater?
You know what? I've been going to I think every Apple event since 2000. And it's great to go there.
Don't rub it in, Jim.
But, you know, there's a lot to be said for the way that they're doing these now. I mean, I'm sitting in my living room.
I love it that I don't have to wait till The Verge takes a picture of the screen so that I can analyze, like this shot. I wanted to look and see what the A14 had in it. And now I just freeze the video and I can look and it's perfect and
But Jim, to your point, though, would you, as a press person, would you feel like you were slighted if you came to Steve Jobs Theater
and they showed a video
and instead of a stage thing, you watched a movie that was this, right? And then you went out and played with the hardware. You know, would it matter to you that they didn't do it live on stage and you just watched it on the big LED wall?
Here's how you do it.
What if they had a middle point, right?
Exactly.
Where they had someone personally
there.
Because I think that people would be offended.
Watch this video.
Yeah. And kind of because then they get both. They get that control. They can make it kind of shorter, cleaner. They don't have to worry. And they showed some things hands-on, but most of it was then a curated experience of videos with a live, like, you know, your favorites were still out there. And so you got to meet them. And then after you go off and you can, you know, go try on all the stuff. And then we have all the parties afterwards that everyone loves. And you end up with both experiences. But I do like how clean it was and how short and concise. And there wasn't any of that waiting while everything gets set up and, you know, Steve yells at people for turning off the Wi-Fi, not stopping the show.
I kind of missed that,
though. Around. It's kind of nice. Like, I like the live idea of things that can go wrong, right? Like when Elon Musk is out there shooting, like, you know, a ball bearing at the window and it breaks. Like that you wouldn't get, which I love. But I do like that it was done in an hour.
I think
which
that's a
you can't
selling
really
point
do if you're doing that live.
For the companies. I think they love that no surprises thing. A lot.
Yeah, to Alex's point, you know, well, I guess the thing that I miss right now about actually attending the events is getting some time with the hardware.
Right.
You know.
Right. And so if you just watched a movie, would it matter? That's the question.
Well, I think that it would upset a lot of people that went because as much as Apple's doing a great job doing these virtual events, they also do incredible live events. And I think there's a lot of people see something or feel something when they go to these of having Tim or Craig or, you know, Schiller come out and talk. You know, if it's not for that, they could just continue on virtual events. I mean, it's more comfortable to sit at home and in my living room watch on my Apple TV.
Right. That's all I ever feel like get as to a, do anyway, a, so I don't mind.
Yeah. As a viewer, I think a lot of times I feel like I just wanted to move faster. This goes back to our attention
deficit. The TikTok.
The TikTok thing is that I just want them to, you know, get to the next thing. And I think that the most viewed thing is not the whole show. It's the condensed version, the 10 or 12 minutes that goes out later that day or the next day of, you know, this is just the stuff that was announced. Because a lot of people just want to see that. Just want the protein.
Yeah.
Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. As we slowly get back to things and the new normal, we still need to be smart about how we do business. Luckily, Stamps.com makes things a whole lot easier. If you signed up for Stamps.com because you heard our ads in the months past, you're probably pretty glad you did because you can get everything you used to have to go to the post office to do. You can get everything done at your desk with Stamps.com. Keep your business running. Avoid the crowds at the post office. I haven't been to the post office since March. Stamps.com lets you print postage on demand and avoid going to the post office. You'll save money with, believe it or not, deals you can't even get at the post office. They also offer now, and this is so exciting, not just USPS, but UPS services with discounts up to 62%. And I don't know if you know this, but if you ship UPS, they charge you a residential surcharge if it's going to a home, not with Stamps.com. No residential surcharge when you use Stamps.com to send your UPS packages. We've been using Stamps.com. They've been a partner of this show since 2012. If you haven't tried Stamps.com, I got to wonder, what are you waiting for? For those of you who started early, you're happy, aren't you? You don't have to go to the post office. Stamps.com brings all the mailing and shipping services you need right to your computer. Now that they do UPS, it's even more important to be using Stamps.com. You can figure out what's the best way to send any package. If you sell on Amazon or eBay or on Etsy, the best way to ship to your customers is with Stamps.com. Use your computer to print official U.S. postage any time of the day or night, not just for letters, but for packages for any class of mail, even UPS, anywhere you want to send. And once your mail is ready, you leave it for your mail carrier or your UPS pickup, or you can even drop it in the mailbox if you want. It's so simple. And with Stamps.com, such great discounts, 5 cents off every stamp, 5 cents, a nickel off every stamp, up to 62% off USPS and UPS shipping rates. It's just so much better, so much easier. It represents you better, too. When that package comes, it's that pre-print, professionally printed label with your logo. It automatically takes all the information from the website or from your address book, so you don't have to do a lot of typing. It's just a no-brainer. It saves you time. It saves you money. I don't know why you're not a customer. Well, maybe because you were waiting for a good deal. You saw this $5 free postage deal on the front page of Stamps.com. Well, don't do that. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner and then enter the offer code TWIT. And then look what happens. That $5 turns into $55 in free postage. You get $110 value. You get a USB scale, so you always have exactly the right postage. And a four-week trial of stamps.com. This is an exceptional offer. You got to take advantage of it. Stamps.com. Don't forget, click that microphone at the top of the homepage and type in TWIT. Stamps.com. Who needs the post office? We love the post office. Who needs to go to the post office when you've got it all right there on your desk at stamps.com? Thank you, Stamps. Since 2012, 8 years, they've been supporting our show. Thank you, Stamps. We appreciate it. You support our show by using that offer code. It's good for you. It's good for us. Stamps.com. Click the microphone. Offer code. TWIT. Let's take a little break. We have a little TikTok-style video to show you. This was kind of, we call it our best of the week. This is what happened earlier on TWIT. This is the iPad Air. That is a lie. It is not an all-screen design.
Bezels are like the Smash Mouth of industrial design. What did they ever do to get everybody so mad at it?
Neil, it's an iPad, and the bezels are okay.
Thank you, Smash Mouth, Doc Rock.
Previously on TWIT. TWIT News.
What we expected is a new iPad Air and an Apple Watch Series 6. We got it. They also announced an Apple Watch SE, which is a lower cost, a more limited feature Apple Watch, I think chiefly designed for children.
This week in enterprise tech.
Healthcare facilities are one of the biggest targets of cyber attack. In this case, a woman in Germany died in what may be the first death directly linked to a cybersecurity or cyber attack on a hospital.
Tech News Weekly.
In Japan, they have a workforce shortage. Two of the largest convenience store franchises in the country are deploying robots. They're operated by a single human. They guide the robot to stock the shelves. Geez. Robots are coming to take our jobs. You probably never heard that before, right, Micah?
TWIT.
Hello, welcome to the podcast. This is Tech News Weekly.
What a wonderful podcast spoken out of the mouth of a robot.
Georgia Dow is a VR fanatic. We know this about you. Are you a Vive or a Quest user?
If I have the choice, it will be the Vive.
Yeah, I like the Vive too. And I have to say, when Facebook announced, and I was very disappointed, that you would have to have a Facebook account to use the Quest, I said, well, I guess I won't be using the Quest 2. What do you think of the new Oculus Quest?
I would love it if I didn't have to sign in with Facebook. You already know my feelings on Facebook.
So
and
annoying.
It's so horrific, especially, and everyone knew that they were lying. When they first acquired Oculus, they said, you know what? We're not going to change anything. We're not going to infiltrate. Don't even worry. This will be fine. And then, of course, after everyone has it, now you're going to have to log in. We're not even at 2022 and we have to log in to the Quest with, and with Oculus for that. We're just going to use the features that we can and the games that we can that we already have. And we're in, you know, a very lucky position that we're able to do that. But that's also kind of infuriating to me. So I find that really depressing.
Ironically, John Carmack, who left id, the creator of Doom, to go to Oculus, says he's kind of embarrassed over the Oculus social apps. You'd think Facebook, I mean, if you have to use a Facebook sign-on, at least it should have some good social stuff. He says kind of embarrassed by Spaces, which is gone. Would you ever use it for socializing? It seems to me not a very pleasant way to get together with friends.
Even it's not horrible, COVID. Though. Really? It's not a horrible way to get together.
We did a whole VR show.
It was quite a lot of fun. Like, I felt closer to the people that were there because we could actually interact in a different way. Like, you're not getting the same body reactions. You're not, like, most of language is through like facial features. We get the intonation, but not really the body language that goes with it. But I thought it was kind of fun in this post-COVID world. I think that there's definitely a place for that where you can still watch a movie and you really feel like when you're sitting in a false theater and watching a movie together, you can still kind of like poke and bother the person next to you and whisper and you're there in the room. It's kind of interesting. Like, I think that there's a little bit of a barrier to entry, but it's a midpoint.
The Oculus Quest was, I thought, the best VR, not because it had the best quality, but because it had no wires, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. It really had a great experience, and it was lower cost than buying an Oculus Rift or the Vive. The new Quest 2 has two flavors, $299 for 64 gigabytes of storage, because remember, you're not attached to a computer, $399 for 256 gigs of storage. It's a faster processor, the Snapdragon XR2. It's got 50% more RAM, 6 gigs of RAM. It's 10% lighter. It's still got all the cameras. In fact, one of the things that was cool about the Quest is, even though it came with paddles, the cameras were sufficiently sophisticated that it could see your hands. And I think more and more we were starting to see games that didn't require the controllers, that you could just use your hands to do stuff. I don't know. I don't have much experience. Was that working pretty well for you, or did you try it?
Yeah, it works really well. It's very effective. It works really smoothly. One of my children is pretty much just, an Oculus user, and we it was great. It's so sad that all of the little tiny pieces that I don't think that most people are really bothered by, but for those that are more privacy conscious or like not that into Facebook, I think that for some people, this will be a deal breaker.
Did you watch the Oculus Office video? Infinite
that I did
Office.
Not.
Oh, this is fun. Let me see if I can see if this is something that you want to do with the Oculus Quest. Here she is. She's sitting in the kitchen. I'll turn off the music because we don't need this silly music, but she's sitting in the kitchen. She's put on the visor. She's making strange gestures because she's seeing a giant display in front of her. The rest of the world is black and white. Look, her roommate just came in and she could see her kind of grayed out, black and white. Oh, she says, oh, I better move into my office. But you know what? Your office can be anywhere. She's now in the, this seems like it would induce nausea. It would be so uncomfortable. But you live in VR. So is this something you would like to, there's a keyboard you would like to do in an office? Look at that weird disembodied hand. By the way, this is so creepy, that disembodied hand. I don't like that.
I'm used to the disembodied hands because for most games, they're just hands. You don't have an arm. So right. That wouldn't bother me. And this, it does feel a little bit Minority Report. And I'm okay with that. I kind of think that that's kind of cool, that if you can't actually be there, this would be a great way. Like if you're dealing with, a surgery and you need to move stuff around, to be able to actually be out there and manipulate things.
Yeah, she's in her bedroom now.
And to be able to send things.
Yeah.
And we can't go anywhere, but you could then kind of be in the office, but you're not in the office is useful in certain cases where we wouldn't be able to simulate that we're with other people. And so I'm like, this future is probably going to be happening if we like it or if we don't. But I think that this is a use case that could work.
This is the new Facebook Infinite Office. We'll roll out later this winter. I think probably they're rushing it because in COVID times, at least, you get a lot of adoption early on. There's a Logitech keyboard that will work with it. And it'll be not only work with it, but it'll be tracked and rendered within the headset. So you can actually see the keyboard. Facebook said new features will be rolling out over the coming months. Early releases will focus on personal productivity rather than group collaboration. So you like it. You think that would be cool.
I think that there's use cases for that. I do. Right. So okay. Again, let's take off the Facebook part.
It's a non-starter if I have to have a Facebook account to use that, though.
Yeah. Not doing it, especially not for now. This is office work, and this is definitely not for me. But even if you're a medical professional or you work in a law firm or like antitrust issues, this becomes a huge issue. And I'm sure that Facebook wants more data because most offices, you're not allowed to log into Facebook or they don't want you to, or there's an issue with that. And so, again, it kind of creeps me out. Like they're now trying to get their fingers, not just into your home. And what are you doing and how active are you at home, which they can then get the data if you log into Facebook. But also now, what do you do at work?
Right.
No.
Jim Dalrymple,
we're worried about TikTok.
Your beard.
Right,
your beard
right, exactly.
Would burst right through. Would you ever work like that, Jim? It doesn't seem like something you'd go for.
No, that's not really okay. Me.
What if you could go to a heavy metal concert at?
I would rather go to the concert.
I've done a movie in a false theater. And it was a lot of you felt like you were in a movie theater. It was kind of a fun experience. Okay. I've done one kind of a concerty kind of experience, and it wasn't the same, just the sound and the mood, but the movie was pretty interesting. It was a horrible movie, but it was a lot of fun to be able to be there. And to have everyone else that was there, and they're all real people in the theater.
One of the things that there are a couple of things that cause nausea with these visors. One of them is a low refresh rate. The the new Oculus Quest 2 is 72 hertz, but Facebook says they can push 90 hertz refresh rates out in software, so there'll be faster refresh rates. The screen clarity, according to reviewers, is better. It's got a different pixel layout, more pixels than the previous generation, 50% more. So it sounds like it'd be a nice visual experience. I don't know if I'd want to watch a movie. Yeah, Alex, are you a VR guy? I can't remember.
I've done a lot. We actually did help to launch the 360 video stuff with Facebook. So we definitely had a lot of experience with using them. And I played a lot of Robo Recall. Conquered it.
Nice.
You know, but the biggest problem I had with it is that the Samsung gear, you could adjust, I could take my glasses off and adjust the focus.
The interocular.
And I can't do that.
Yeah.
It's not interocular. This is the distance to my eyes to focus it.
Okay.
No, this is not. Yeah. This is instead of the IPD, the problem really is just focus. And it's not interaxial distance that was the problem for me. It was that I can't play the games without my glasses, and then I had to get my glasses underneath them, and then they're all like bending around, and it just wasn't a good experience. And so at some point I just got tired. And I think that this is actually a problem for a lot of VR goggles, is that people with prescriptions that don't have contacts, you just get to a point where you're not willing to do it anymore. Like I was just like, oh, I'm done with that. Like, I don't want to play anymore. Right. And so I literally just, you know, the Samsung one was actually relatively easy for me to use because I can take my glasses off, throw them on, and, you know, scroll, focus in, and then go. I just found I got to kind of the end of the road with both HTC and with Oculus because I just got tired of mashing up my glasses against my face to play. And I didn't really want to go out and buy, you know, things. Especially when I knew the problem with Samsung ruined me is I knew that there was a small mechanical fix for this that they weren't doing. And so it made me frustrated.
Angry.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick little break. We have a bunch of small, assorted, unrelated stories we can run through and wrap things up in just a little bit. Oh, shoot. I left my Raycons in the other room. I should run and get them. They're so beautiful. When you're listening to music, Jim, you know this, it's great to have earbuds. You can move around. There's no wires. But these are often very expensive devices. I love my Raycons, premium wireless earbuds for about half the price. There's a lot to be said for that. These new everyday E25 earbuds, the best yet. 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing. This was an advantage that Apple had with the AirPods for a while, but now these Raycons, man, they pair so nice. And the base, they come with a number of different, six different sizing tips, so you can get the size and seal just right. The base sounds fantastic. The design is very compact. And with those, when you get the right ear, but in there, the earpiece in there, the noise isolating fit is just superb. I love my Raycons. Stylish and discreet. No dangling wires, no stems. And because it was founded by a musician, I guess it's not a surprise. Ray J, of course, is the Ray in Raycon. But there are a lot of celebrities, including Snoop Dogg, Melissa Etheridge, Mike Tyson, Rich the Kid. They love the Raycons. Now, I want you to try them. There's a 45-day free return policy. So if you have any doubts, no problem. You're going to love the price. You're going to love the savings. And I know you're going to love the sound. That's why I recommend wireless earbuds from Raycon. It's where why I wear them. And that's why they're not with me. They're in the I left them in the other room. For a limited time, get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/twit. B-U-Y. RAYCON.com/twit. That's a great deal on already a very affordable earbuds. It's 15% off the Raycon wireless earbuds. You're going to love the sound. You're going to love the Raycons. And with a 45-day free return policy, there's no risk at all. Buyraycon.com/twit. Give them a trial in your own home and see what you think. They sound great. And boy, the price is fantastic. I wear my Raycons all the time. All right, couple of short stories. Who's buying an Xbox? Who's buying a PlayStation? PS5, Xbox One, Series X, rather. Who's going to buy? Have you decided, Alex? Sony or Microsoft?
I have Apple Arcade, and I like to play Kingdom Rush on my phone, and that's pretty much it.
You're not a console gamer.
Not a console gamer.
Sony does have the PlayStation VR, which is pretty good. Have you ever played that, Georgia?
I have, and it's good, but when you have like a higher system, it's hard to kind of go back, just because if it doesn't connect, I find it really frustrating. And we're waiting. We have like the, right now my husband's on the PS2 and he's fired up all the old games and
so you're a PS you're in line for the PS5.
We might be, though. We were usually an Xbox like players, so we're gonna wait and see. But we're not gonna be rushing out. We're not part of the people that are really angry about not being able to grab anything.
Yeah, there was a big issue on Saturday, actually previously, with PS5 pre-orders. PlayStation, Sony took to Twitter on Saturday to apologize and say we have more, and we're gonna put more in the pipeline. So don't. Do not fear. The new PlayStation 5 will be $499.99 if you want the digital, optical disc. I would just say get the digital edition, which is $399.99, $100 less. You don't get the Blu-ray player. But since most games these days are big downloads, even if you have a disc, I'd say get the digital edition. I think that's probably what we're going to get. I asked Michael, our 17-year-old. He has both, and his birthday is November 26th. And he said, I want a PS5. So that's going to be November 12th. It's going to come out in the U.S. and the 19th in the rest of the world. On the other hand, Dad's an Xbox gamer, so I might have to get... I might have to just get the... We might have to have both. I don't know. I feel spoiled. Be interesting to see. Last time, there was this great game of chicken between Sony and Microsoft. And Microsoft blinked and announced a price for their Xbox One, which Sony then undercut by $100. And that was enough to put the Sony PlayStation 4 way ahead for the entire lifespan, really, of these consoles. This time, same thing. Microsoft went first, but Microsoft had such a stunning price point that there was no question of Sony undercutting it. So they both are $500 consoles. Microsoft has a less expensive all-digital solution, but it's not as good. It doesn't have the same processor and all that. Microsoft Series S will be $299. So maybe Microsoft undercuts Sony. We'll see. All right. Enough of that. Nobody cares, obviously. let's see. Peacock has done a deal with Roku. You're now going to be able to get Peacock on your Roku. What did it take? It took NBC threatening to pull all its apps from the Roku platform. They threatened that on Friday. By Friday afternoon, Roku said, yeah, we'll make a deal. So that actually was, a mistake when they launched Peacock not to be on Roku. That's the number one streaming device, but they're there now.
Is anyone watching Peacock?
No.
No, I don't
like Peacock.
Don't like the Peacock?
So here's the thing. If you watch any of the shows, I bought Peacock, the top of the line, $10 a month thing. Just recently, I was watching a show called Buried in the Backyard. You know, it's a murder type show. I think it's from Oxygen. I got a note that a new season was released, season 3, on Hulu, but not on Peacock.
Oh,
and it's a Peacock show.
That pisses me off when they do that.
So now I'm thinking, so I really liked watching The Blacklist. There are very few network shows that I watch anymore, but The Blacklist I really liked.
That's a good one.
But I'm a full season behind, so I say, oh, Peacock, they make The Blacklist. So I go in after I buy it. They have one season out of 7. It's their show.
Is it
show.
Like the middle season? Like you can't even start it?
I don't even know what season it is. But why am I paying $10 a month for a service that they're bragging about shows that are 50 years old? Oh, look at our catalog. I don't care about 50-year-old shows. I want some of the new shows. But even the shows that I do want to watch, they only have 1 or 2 seasons. And then I have to buy Hulu in order to watch the rest. So what's the point? Peacock sucks.
It's kind of this whole streaming thing is frustrating as hell to me.
We're
going to end up spending hundreds of dollars to get the shows we want because it's so fragmented. You have too many subscriptions.
I think that, you know, we've kind of finished. So I think that, you know, like there's Disney when Mandalorian's out. my wife likes a couple things on Hulu, Netflix and Apple.
So you just rotate through them? You like
No.
Pay for a month.
Everyone knows. No. We don't rotate. I mean, I'm just saying that's like
that's
we have
it.
Those.
You got everything.
I turn Disney off and on because I don't care about anything other than Mandalorian.
Right.
So it's kind of like, okay, I turn it on and watch Mandalorian, then I turn it off. I can see why they do it every month or every week because if they gave it me Mandalorian, I would just spend a whole weekend watching Mandalorian.
You just buy it for 1 month, and then that would be
Mandalorian, of course, is technically besides the fact that it's a Star Wars show and people love it, it's technically very interesting too because they use these virtual sets. They won last night. They won Disney Plus's first Emmy Awards. The creative Emmys are over tonight, of course, the big Emmy Awards, but they were nominated for 5 creative Emmys or won 5 creative Emmys for outstanding special visual effects, outstanding cinematography for a 1-camera series, sound mixing, sound editing, and production design, all of them in technical fields, but they also are nominated for actor and drama, and that'll be tonight.
I think that they should also win for the cutest animated creature. Here we go.
Baby Yoda.
I've been slowly printing a version.
Cute.
Oh, that's creepy.
Came out of the
half printed baby Yoda.
Well, it's as you know, the
he doesn't have the cute part yet.
I see. That's pretty cool. Anyway, that's a big print. You must have a big printer.
I got a Quitty Pro or whatever. It has a pretty big volume, so it's like I print a lot of. I have lots of things that I'm printing.
PLA
so,
that you
get
made
a whole
that
Mandalorian helmet next. Yeah.
You know, I downloaded the model.
Did you?
my daughter wanted a, she was like, we want a Mandalorian helmet. Yeah, I got the Max one. That's too much. But the one, the X Plus is what I got. It took like 20 minutes to put it together. It's amazing how 3D printing has become, and it's super easy to use Mac or PC, you know, anyway.
I've owned a couple of 3D printers, and every time I just threw up my hands in disgust and frustration and gave them to a school because they're just hard. You have to constantly adjust them and stuff. Have they gotten to the point now where it's a little bit more push button?
It's crazy easy. Okay, like it was, it sat in my desk. I bought it like 2 months ago and it sat around for a while because I was afraid of what you were talking about. Like, oh, this is going to be a lot of figuring out.
Yep.
20 minutes later, I'm printing. Like, oh. I was just like,
but Alex, are you saying crazy easy for someone with your technical knowledge and skill?
Yeah,
because
right.
For me, crazy easy might not be your crazy easy.
It was pretty simple. Like, I took the stuff off, I threaded the thing into the, you know, the little, I threaded the PLA in.
See, and you that, already lost me at PLA.
It's just plastic. It's on a spool.
The only thing that took time was the first leveling of the platform, which is that you have to take this little thing and go back and forth. You say, go over to this corner, and you go back and forth until it's, and you have to do something manually to get it to, it's not auto leveling or whatever. And so I had to do that. That took 5 minutes and it was not, it was kind of a, it took some time, but it wasn't hard to figure out how to do it. And then after that, I printed a test thing. I walked away and came back. And then after that, I started.
It's just push button. Which one did you get again? The QIDI Plus?
The X Plus, I think, is the one I got. It's about $900, I think.
Ay, 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 caramba. Okay.
Yeah.
This is the $500 X Pro.
I'm sure that they're all, I mean, the, yeah, and it's
probably the size of the chamber.
It's just the size of the print. I think the only thing that was different between that one and the one I got was the print size. You know, I wanted to have a larger print size.
Nice.
So, anyway, how do we get to that?
Mandalorian.
About? Oh, yeah. So, but I think that the I've gotten subscribed out. I feel like there's so much content.
I know.
I'm trying to figure out what to watch every time, I've gotten more interested in the quality of the videos, you know, how high quality is the video, the audio. I have a surround system in my house, and so it's kind of like, is it going to take advantage of it or not? And, you know, those kinds of things.
Isn't that one of the big frustrations people are expressing now with HBO Max is it doesn't have 4K. It's HBO Mini.
I don't.
HBO Sub Max.
Yeah, and there's not a lot on HBO that I feel like I need to see.
Actually, Perry Mason.
I agree with Alex there. There's not a lot on HBO Max.
I like Perry Mason. Have you seen Perry Mason?
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. That's old. That's old, man.
Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is the reason that I will not watch a series. I mean, other than something like Mandalorian, which I'm really into. But generally, I won't watch a series until it's done. Like, so literally,
because
I won't even start it.
Like, the destructive final seasons that aren't any good. You don't want to go through that again.
Season 8 was so bad. I don't want to commit. Like, I want to know, like, did it end well? And if it didn't end well, I'm like, I don't even want to commit any time to you. You know, like, I don't want to have this end well.
But then don't you go through that issue of, like, someone might spoil what's going to happen for you also. So you end up with that kind of, you don't want to wait too long before the internet ruins it for you.
I just don't, follow enough people that talk about shows, you know, so I don't really, you know, for whatever reason, I'm not around that conversation very often. Like, we're not talking about shows. So, again, Mandalorian is one that we all talk about. And maybe it's because it is that one every week that we have time to ingest it and think about it and talk through it. But outside of that, I pretty much, I'm so disconnected from that because we just finished watching Person of Interest. Like, my wife went into a grind of just watching Person of Interest for 2 months, and so we just got to the end of it last night. And so, but it's much more fun because you just watch it every night. You watch the same. Here's the thing is that they make so much more sense when you're watching them every night. Like, when you can watch like five or six seasons every night or two or three a week or whatever, it all ties together. You understand all the subplots and everything else because I can't remember them between week. I'm too old.
Oh, you know, I agree with you. I have to binge now. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
who's
I'd
that?
Much rather
What's,
watch.
What, who's
yeah,
that?
Like, who did that come? But when you watch them, when you're kind of watching like one every night, it all, you know, kind of ties together.
We've been watching. This is the most embarrassing guilty pleasure ever. a reality show on Bravo called Below Deck, which is about the crews of super mega yachts.
Oh.
And if you don't watch every night, if you don't watch a bunch of episodes once, you know, are they, is she hooking up with him? Wait a minute. Who's that? Why are they? You just, it's impossible. It's impossible. We've actually, I'm embarrassed to admit, we have now finished every episode. I think it's like 90 hours of people on super yachts.
Well, and my problem is my wife will tell you I'm very repetitive. I like certain sections of movies and I'll just go back and watch.
Yeah.
You know, like 30 minutes of a movie or there's sometimes shots that I like, scenes. And I'll just go through and watch the scene, you know, and it drives her absolutely crazy because I'll sit there and just watch these like 3 minute scenes over, you know, in succession because I'm interested in something about them. And, you know, I don't need to watch the whole thing anymore. I've already seen the movie 20 times.
I can watch the Indianapolis monologue in Jaws with Robert Shaw. I can watch that over and over and over again.
What's funny is like my kids, I haven't let them see all of Man on Fire, but there's like, if I say, you know, like, I wish you had more time, you know, they
know.
Like, know
what, they know.
They're like, like they know someone's about to get blown up.
I'm about to get blown up. It's time to say goodnight to all our family. Alex, Lindsay, we miss you. Come back and visit us on Mac Absolutely. Break Weekly sometime. I know you're very, very busy.
It's just that during the week that is the conflict. The weekend I still have, but the week is just
yeah. Well, good. Crazy. I'm glad you could come by on a Sunday.
Yeah, I'd love to.
090.media if you want to hire this guy, the best in the business. Don't forget you can watch him on YouTube, youtube.com/AlexLindsay. The office hours are every morning. They start around 6 a.m. Pacific. They go to around 9 a.m. Pacific. The meat of the matter is between 7 and 8, right? Or 8 and 9? I can't remember.
7 and 8 is really when we're just talking generally about media production and virtual production. And it's an incredible cast of it's me just kind of holding court with 20 really or 30 fun. amazing experts. And there's usually 200 or 300 people there asking questions. And so it's a really interesting platform.
Great way to learn. Really, really great. Yeah. Thank you, Alex. Great to see you. At loopinsight.com, you'll find the beard, Jim Dalrymple. He's at Dalrymple, at J Dalrymple on the Twitter. Anything you want to plug? Anything you want to talk about, Jim, that we haven't mentioned?
No, you're very kind.
He's the birthday boy.
Everything's good.
He's the birthday boy. Listen to the Dalrymple Report. If you like Jim here, you can listen to his podcast. That's also on loopinsight.com. We just love the beard. We'll see you soon.
Always great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Take care. And of course, I had to leave the best for last because Georgia Dow is so great. She's so cool. She has these great videos that help you be a better parent or sleep better or overcome anxiety. Do you have any specifically for people suffering in quarantine? Because I could use one of those.
We deal with the anxiety ones. We deal with the depression ones and kind of like self-esteem, making yourself feel better. And I'm going to plug that it's not out yet, but Renee and I are going to be starting a new podcast.
What? Tell me about that. Renee Ritchie and Georgia Dow. Now, that would be hot.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully people will like it, but we just kind of started out with it. We've reshot it like three times.
So it's a YouTube? Before. Is it a YouTube?
So it will be on YouTube. We're going to have it out hopefully soon.
What are you going to be doing? What are you talking about?
We're doing with technology, but also the social aspects of technology. So we're kind of trying to get a little deeper into it. So nice. It's not just the tech aspect. So
very good.
We'll see where that goes.
Two of my favorite people. Anxiety-videos.com for those great videos. I own them all. It's really well worth it. And of course, she's open to emails if you're struggling a little bit. Georgia's there. She can help. It's Georgia@westmounttherapy.com. Thank you, Georgia Dow. Thank you, Jim Dalrymple. Thank you, Alex Lindsay. Great to have you. Thank you, your name here, for being a very wonderful patron of the program. We appreciate you watching. We stream the show live every Sunday afternoon, 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern time. That's 21:30 UTC. You can tune in at twit.tv/live. There's links there to all the different audio and video feeds. So that's the one place to go where you can find, you know, YouTube or Twitch or whatever it is you like to watch. It's twit.tv/live. If you're watching live, it happens there's a lot of other people doing that, and they're all in the chat room, where they're throwing spitballs like the bad kids in the back of the class. That's irc.twit.tv. It's actually a great social group, and they're there all the time, so you're always welcome to stop by, irc.twit.tv. After the show's over, we edit it, we take out all the good parts, and we put it up on the internet. You can get it at our website, twit.tv, or you can also subscribe in your favorite podcast application. That way you'll get it automatically. We also, and I should mention this, after every show we do on the network, we record a little tidbit for our flash briefing. So if you have an Amazon Echo, the flash briefing is a nice feature on the Echo. I listen every morning to get all my news. You can add Twit to your flash briefing. You'll get a little bit of Twit in there in every flash briefing. We are, it's that time of year. We're looking for our best ofs. We're about to compile those into our year enders. So if you go to twit.tv/best of, if there was a moment in this show or any show this year that you think deserves to be replayed in our best ofs during our holiday episodes, please go to twit.tv/best of. I know the submission form says, you know, time into episode and all of that stuff. Whatever you can give us. Obviously, you don't have to know all the details. Just whatever you can give us. Our editors are pretty good at tracking down your favorite clips. And we'll put that together for the end of the year. Thanks for being here, everybody. Have a safe and happy week. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye.